This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Good morning, everybody. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Well, if you look at the news, whether it's locally, nationally, or even internationally, so many of the questions we're dealing with end up becoming questions about law enforcement, questions about security. And we are privileged to be joined for the hour by a gentleman who is a seasoned law enforcement professional, the former commissioner of the New York City Department of Correction, the former commissioner of the NYPD, author of the book From Jailer to Jailed, one of the best books I've read on both sides of the criminal justice system, a gentleman who has been around the block when it comes to local and national and even international law enforcement, former New York City Police Commissioner Bernard Carrick. Commissioner, I know I'm asking a lot by having you stay up this late. I appreciate it a great deal.
I got to tell you, Frank, you're awful lively at 1 o'clock in the morning, my man. Awful lively.
My day's just started. My day's just getting started. I have 5 hours worth of topics that I want to cover with you, and we're going to do the best that we can to do it in an hour. Now,
that's because you're insane, Frank. That's because you're insane. That's why. I just want to share that with the listeners.
You are not the first person to say that, but you're probably the most accomplished person to say that. Let me first ask you a little bit about some of the news that came out yesterday regarding Mayor Giuliani. I don't think anybody's been closer to Mayor Giuliani than you have over the course of the last quarter century or so. He appointed you to be Commissioner of Department of Corrections, Commissioner of the NYPD. You guys were involved in a great deal of stuff investigating the 2020 election. You guys have a long history. It came out yesterday that CNN reported that they had obtained this exclusive audio of the mayor, who you can hear every day, 3 p.m., right here on WABC, seeming to suggest to a Ukrainian official that if they would just investigate Joe Biden or make an announcement about an investigation, that Ukraine and the United States could have a better relationship. They obtained this 40 minutes of audio. Here's a snippet of it.
If he could make some statement at the right time that he supports a fair, honest law enforcement system, and that these investigations go wherever they have to go, it's going to be run by honest people, that would clear the air really well. And I think it would make it possible for me to come and make it possible, I think, for me to talk to the president and see what I can do about making sure that whatever misunderstandings are put aside. And maybe even, I kind of think that This could be a good thing for having a much better relationship where we really understand each other.
Commissioner, any reaction at all to the audio published by CNN? Do you think the mayor did anything wrong?
No, I honestly, Frank, and it's odd. I just, I've been traveling a lot lately. I was down in Georgia over the weekend for the GOP convention with Vernon Jones, who's running for governor of Georgia, and I got back. I heard this stuff. I haven't been able to talk to the mayor about it yet, but I have to tell you, there's two things that come to mind. One, I don't hear him saying anything wrong on the tape. But two, I wish the Ukraine would conduct an investigation, and I wish once and for all Hunter Biden and Joe Biden would be held accountable for their actions in a number of different categories, in a number of different places, but Ukraine being one of them. And we continue on a daily basis. Today, there was more information released about Hunter Biden and his criminal conduct in Romania. I just listened to that snippet of the tape. I don't hear anything wrong by the mayor, although it in some way it almost doesn't sound like the mayor. But if it is, I don't hear anything wrong with it. And like I said, personally, I wish somebody would conduct an investigation involving the Ukraine, Romania, China, Russia, and probably three or four other countries that I'm not thinking of right now because you got me up in the middle of the night. But Hunter Biden should be held accountable for his actions.
Are you concerned that because the Biden administration is now in charge, ultimately, of the Department of Justice, that Hunter Biden may not be properly investigated for some of the conflicts of interest and potential illegalities that you're referencing?
Well, listen, I don't care if it's the Biden administration or which administration it is. He hasn't been investigated and held accountable for what he's done. And nobody knows that better than I do. I saw everything. In fact, I didn't even get to see everything. I saw most of what's on the hard drive from hell. And I can tell you, based on what I've seen, he should have been indicted, for VARA violations. He should have been indicted for fraud. He should have been indicted for a number of different things. Child porn. He should have been indicted for a number of different things by the U.S. authorities, both the state authorities of Delaware and the feds, and he has not been charged, and that should scare the hell out of everybody because, you have the Justice Department in what appears to be the weaponization of the department going after people like Giuliani, claiming they'll look at one FARA violation. Well, I can promise you there's at least five, if not more, that I'm aware of on the hard drive. And nobody's saying anything about it. And every single day, as I said, every day something else comes out about Hunter Biden, and nobody's doing anything about that either. So I don't know, Frank. I mean, it's, we appear to have a two-tier system. One for the powerful, one for the people of Washington, and then one for everybody else. And, that should scare everyone in this country.
You know better than anybody that investigations, criminal investigations, be they federal or state, can become very political. And a lot of people are targeted, maybe because they're high profile or because of who they're associated with, or to put pressure on them to cooperate against other people who are high profile. When you're doing an investigation of somebody like Rudy Giuliani, for instance, which apparently the Southern District is doing, or a potential investigation of somebody like Hunter Biden, who, let's face it, is the president's son, so he's political by his very nature. How do you conduct an investigation like that without having politics enter into it? Because it seems to me like if there were to be an indictment of, say, Hunter Biden or an indictment of Rudy Giuliani, you'd have half the country screaming and saying, we don't believe that indictment. We think it's just politics. How do you have any prosecutor's office have credibility so that if they issue an indictment, that the people trust that it's motivated by people breaking laws and not by settling political scores?
Well, listen, the system is supposed to be fair. They're supposed to abide by the law. They're not supposed to weaponize the department in any way. There used to be historically all these flags in place within the Department of Justice that if you was looking at someone like if you were looking at somebody like Rudy Giuliani or even Hunter Biden, there would be a mechanism to get approvals within the department up the chain of command maybe the deputy attorney general who would sign off on moving forward with certain elements of an investigation or an indictment. What's odd in this case is the Department of Justice, to my understanding, had looked at a number of different things involving Rudy Giuliani in the last administration. It went up the chain. The department said, there's nothing there. You can't move forward with this. And as soon as, the Biden administration come in, that all changed. And I guess I have a I have an inside view of this that most people don't, but that's what I was just talking about. I'm pretty familiar with what they're talking about with regard to Rudy. And I'm also, I also know a hell of a lot when it comes to Hunter Biden, his father, his uncle Jim, his partner, and other players within that hard drive. And there is no investigation. We don't see an investigation. We haven't heard about an investigation. We don't see grand jury subpoenas and people getting picked up and harassed by the Department of Justice under no circumstances. And that is just crazy, because I can assure you, if a basic objective prosecutor took that laptop and got into it, looked into it, they would be looking at a number of crimes. And I just, here's a good one, Frank. You know, they went into Rudy Giuliani's house at 6 o'clock in the morning looking for electronic devices. And when the mayor himself attempted to hand them an electronic device, which was in the warrant, in the search warrant, and that electronic device happened to be Hunter Biden's hard drive, the FBI agent in charge of the search gave it back to him. Said, no, we're not. We don't want that. We're not interested in that. Well, that thing contains an enormous amount of criminal activity, but you weren't interested in that? Come on.
Well, the other interesting thing about that, and I've heard the mayor tell that story before, is that they essentially just took his word for it, that it was Hunter Biden's hard drive. You know, it was very interesting how that whole search warrant was conducted. Talking with former New York City Police Commissioner Bernard Kerik, he was a big part of the 2020 Trump campaign, recipient of a pardon from President Trump, distinguished record in the military here in New York City and around the country, around the world, and when it comes to law enforcement. If you have questions, we'll do our best to get the commissioner to answer them. 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Commissioner, let me ask you about some comments you made on Steve Bannon's program yesterday regarding your trip to Georgia. At that very same event that you were attending, Brian Kemp, the governor of Georgia, was actually booed by his fellow Republicans. Evidently, a lot of people not at all happy that he went along with the certification of the Georgia election results. You seem to be questioning whether or not Brian Kemp acted appropriately. As we stand here now, 5 months in almost to the Biden administration, do you still think that there were shenanigans that went on in Georgia, that maybe Donald Trump actually won the state of Georgia?
No, I know for a fact that there's more evidence today than there was back in November and December when we were looking at it, January, when we were looking at it. There is more evidence today to demonstrate that there was fraud, election and voter fraud in Fulton County in Georgia, and the election should not have been certified. It should have gone to Donald Trump. And I'll give you one tidbit of information that we did not have at the time, and that is in the account, in the certification count of batches of ballots for Fulton County, there were 174 batches missing when they certified that vote count. Well, there's 100 ballots in a batch. That's 17,400 ballots that were missing from that count. Donald Trump only lost Georgia by 12,000. He only lost Georgia by 12,000. If that's the case and there were 17,400 missing, well, then Donald Trump, in all probability, took that election for Georgia. Why wasn't that, one, investigated? Why did they certify? Why did the Secretary of State certify? Why did the governor allow it? Why wasn't there an investigation? Why wasn't there a forensic audit? You know, why wasn't the Fulton County video of Ruby Freeman and her daughter, who counted thousands of ballots over and over in the same machines throughout the night on video, that was videoed. Why wasn't that investigated? Why weren't they brought before a grand jury? These are all questions that the people of Georgia have. They rightfully have. And this is exactly why the governor was booed off the stage at his own convention. Keep in mind, he was at the GOP convention for Georgia. That's his convention. He's the head of the Republican Party in Georgia. They basically booed him off the stage. He couldn't even talk.
Why do you think, and I know I'm asking you to speculate as to someone else's frame of mind, if there was evidence of fraud at the time and that evidence has only mounted in the ensuing, you know, in the ensuing 7 months since the election, why would a Republican governor and secretary of state not want to investigate that? What's the theory as to why they would turn a blind eye towards potential evidence of fraud?
Well, keep in mind, Frank, this didn't only happen in Georgia, you know, and I, if you go back to my comments, you know, immediately after the certification and the, you know, the nominating of Joe Biden for president, I said publicly, and I continue to say today, Donald Trump won the election. Donald Trump won the election by a landslide. But, you know, and the election was stolen by the Democrats. However, that's not why Donald Trump's not sitting in the White House. Donald Trump's not sitting in the White House because the state legislators didn't do their job. The state legislators didn't conduct investigations. The state legislators certified vote counts that were fraudulent, and many of them knew it, and I know they knew it. I can say that I'm 100% positive that they knew it, because we were the ones giving them the evidence that was coming into the command center for the campaign. There's almost 3,000 sworn affidavits, and these affidavits are sworn under the penalty of perjury, no different than going into a, you know, a federal grand jury. These affidavits are sworn under the penalty of perjury, and there's almost 3,000 of them that identify evidence of criminal wrongdoing in the election in six different states: Georgia, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Nevada, and others. Well, why wasn't it investigated? Why didn't those states, you know, not certify? Why did these Republican legislators, and look, who are the members of the House and the Congress that basically come out and said Donald Trump was a liar? Nothing, you know, there was nothing fraudulent about the election. Liz Cheney, you know, Kissinger, people like them, these were anti-Trumpers. These were people that despised the president. And I've said this before, Liz Cheney made a statement that the president was lying when he said that there was fraudulent, you know, that the election was rigged. Well, how would she know? How would she know? Because she never came to us. She never came to the legal team. She never asked for a briefing. She never asked to see the evidence that we had. She didn't see anything that we had. So how would she know?
That's,
how did she make a statement like that?
That's a fair question. Commissioner, I'm going to ask you to pause there. We're going to continue with Bernard Kerik. And if you have questions, we'll do our best to get to them. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. A little bit later, we'll touch into the world of social media censorship. Facebook has indicated that the president is banned, or former president, Donald Trump, is banned until at least January of 2023. And violent crime in New York City only seems to be getting worse. Why is that the case, and what can we do about it? Those are a few of the questions I'll pose to Bernard Kerik throughout the course of the hour. But in the meantime, I want to encourage you to do something about your health, and that is where Life Change Tea comes in. You know, Bernie Kerik made a reference to me having a ton of energy at this time of the night. You know why that's the case? Because I am drinking Life Change Tea. This is a phenomenal product. It is a product that gives you a ton of energy without caffeine. It tastes great. There are no fillers, no GMOs. It's completely organic. In addition to giving you a lot of energy, It's a mild cleanse. It's a daily detox that cleanses you from the inside out. With all that cleansing that's happening from the inside out, that's why their slogan is the tea that makes you go. If you start drinking this stuff, you drink two big glasses every day. It's a cold tea. You'll notice right away an improvement and a difference in your digestive health. You'll also notice you have a lot more energy. I want to encourage you to go to the website, getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. And if you go on there, you can use the promo code Frank. So go to getthetea.com, use the promo code Frank. If you do that, getthetea.com, promo code Frank, you'll get to enjoy free shipping when you order. So go ahead and do that. Getthetea.com, promo code Frank.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
New York Minute, they take my Texas time doing it. I do you everywhere but wrong. I'd make love to you in a New York Minute, they take my Texas time doing it. I'd prove that in my arms is where you belong.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Very, very pleased to be joined by one of New York's finest public servants and a gentleman who not only demonstrated a tremendous amount of leadership in the aftermath of the September 11th attacks, but has repeatedly done so in his career in New York City and has written a couple of great books. One is called From Jailer to Jail. That's a memoir. Another is a novel with a lot of elements of truth to it, The Grave Above the Grave. And it is my great pleasure to be joined for the hour by former New York City Commissioner Bernard Kerik. Commissioner, last question about the 2020 election, because there's a lot of other things happening in the world that I want to get your take on. But let's say you're right, that President Trump did actually win the 2020 election. Joe Biden's been sworn in. He's the president now. There was a lot of speculation that voter fraud deprived Richard Nixon of a win over John F. Kennedy back in 1960. Nixon decided for the good of the country that he would not contest the counties in Illinois and elsewhere where there were evidence of voter fraud. He felt it would be the appropriate thing for the country to heal, not to make this an issue. Do you think maybe Donald Trump and his supporters, in the interest of bringing the country together, should say, look, we think we won the election, but we're dealing with the fact that Joe Biden is now the president. Let's just move forward and turn the page on this?
You know what, Frank? I can't talk for the president. I can't speak for the president, but I can tell you this. As an American, as somebody that got to see the inside of what happened, we need to know who was responsible, how they accomplished what they did, and people need to be held accountable. You know, those six swing states, all those people that work in the Democratic Party, they didn't wake up on the morning of November 3rd and go to work and come up with this brain scheme of an idea of added ballots, of corrupt machines and all the things that happened in these six or seven individual states. They didn't do this on their own. This was a coordinated effort. And then you had outside influence, substantial influence by Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook, who put tens of millions of dollars. I want to say it's up around $400 million. And there's a guy named Phil Klein, an attorney named Phil Klein, representing the Tom Moore Society, that is conducting that investigation. And there's overwhelming evidence that they had major impact on the voter turnout, the ballot boxes. There's all kind of corrupt stuff that was going on. That stuff can't happen anymore. We've got to make sure that people, when they vote, it's a fair election. It's a real election. Every vote should count. Every vote should be legal. And this was the most, in my opinion, this was the most corrupt election in the history of this country. And we got to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Since you mentioned Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg, there's been a lot of news on that front as well. Facebook has announced that they are going to continue to ban Donald Trump from their platforms until at least January of 2023. Sunday on ABC's This Week, Facebook's Vice President of Global Affairs, Nick Clegg, talked about that decision.
Our job is not to take these decisions with an eye to, you know, which side of the political aisle is going to agree or disagree more with us, but just to do so in a way that is fair, transparent, and proportionate.
What do you think of Facebook's decision to keep Donald Trump banned until January of 2023?
Of course they're going to keep him banned. They're scared to death of what's going to happen in 2022. They don't want him to have access to Facebook. They don't want him to have access to any social media. That's the bottom line. He has an enormous amount of power in the Republican Party. They know it. They know his influence. They understand his influence, and they want to do everything in their power to keep him off of there until after the 2022 election. You know, you don't have to be a brain surgeon to figure this out. You know, it just amazes me that they'll take somebody like Donald Trump off social media, but they've got the Ayatollah of Iran. They've got, you know, dictators from El Salvador and these other countries, you know, who mass murder, displace their own people. That's okay. They could stay on, but Donald Trump can't.
Now, it does seem like a bit of a double standard. 800-848-9222 if you have questions for Bernard Kerik. Although what Facebook is claiming is that they're not banning Donald Trump for being Donald Trump. They claim it's because his comments were used to incite violence in the run-up to January 6th. But something tells me that's not an argument that's holding much water with you, is it, Commissioner?
Hey Frank, if you're gonna go after any political leaders for violence, and I mean real violence. I'm not talking about a trespass at the U.S. Capitol. I'm talking about violence that tore down U.S. cities. I'm talking about violence that caused $1 billion in damage. Violence where there was, you know, the Antifa and Black Lives Matter engaged in arson and the destruction of probably 20 American cities, 22 or 25 murders, 3 cops that were killed. You want to talk about inciting violence? All right, well, let's talk about the vice president, Kamala Harris, today. Let's talk about Maxine Waters. I can give you a list of 15 Democrats that incited violence, and I mean real violence, where people were killed, and I'm not talking about trespassing at the Capitol. And there was nothing. Those people are still on social media. So that's a crock. Whoever believes that, you have to be a moron.
Charlie Finch has a call and a question for Bernard Kerik. Charlie, what's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. Commissioner, a couple of questions. Based on your extensive experience in Saudi Arabia, do you think the Khashoggi murder was set up by Prince Salman's opponents in order to discredit him? And as you know, Commissioner, Prince Salman has initiated a number of significant reforms in Saudi Arabia, including the modernization of Mecca. It was reported 2 months ago in the New York Times that he has initiated peace talks with the mullahs in Iran. Do you have any inside information on that? And don't you think Frank Morano should celebrate his birthday, Commissioner Kerik?
You could skip the last question there, Commissioner.
Well, listen, I can't, you know, I don't have inside information. My time in Saudi, you know, I did spend a lot of time in the Middle East. You know, I worked for the King of Jordan for 5 years. I did work in Saudi Arabia from 78 to 80 and 82 to 84. And although I don't know the crown prince, I do know his father. His father was the governor of Riyadh when I actually worked there. So that was pretty wild when this kid became the crown prince. I can't say whether it was him or whether he was set up. This was a setup. I can only go by what the intelligence community says, and they basically say that he ordered the execution of Khashoggi. And listen, you know, I can tell you in that side of the world, these things happened. Was I surprised by it? No, I wrote about this. I talked about it. I wasn't surprised, you know, and if they're going to hold them accountable, so be it. But, in that side of the world, these things happen.
We're going to continue with Commissioner Bernard Kerik in just a second. You can call in with your questions, 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Well, if the FBI comes knocking on your door looking for hard drives at 6 o'clock in the morning, maybe the law firm of Angiulli and Gentili is not for you. However, for just about anything else related to the workplace, the law firm of Angiulli and Gentili is exactly for you. If you've gotten hurt at work, or if you have an occupational disease that has turned your life upside down, if you're not sure how your work-related medical bills are going to get paid, the Staten Island law firm of Angiulli and Gentili is looking out for you. They've been helping people out like you for over 35 years. These are good folks who I know personally. They'll meet with you, listen to your concerns, explain how this whole process works to get you the medical treatment and the workers' compensation payments that you're entitled to. The Staten Island lawyers at Angiulli and Gentili have handled thousands of hearings and will help you walk with confidence. So if you have an issue related to workplace injury, call Angiulli and Gentili today at 888-234-COMP. That's 888-234-COMP. They offer both in-person consultations or contactless video appointments. That's 888-234-COMP, 888-234-2667. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano, joined for the hour by former New York City Police Commissioner Bernard Kerik, former New York City Department of Correction Commissioner, and a terrific author in his own right. If you're not following him on Twitter, be sure to do so. He has a lot of great content on there, at Bernard Kerik. That's Bernard, K-E-R-I-K. Commissioner, when you took over as police commissioner, your three predecessors had had a lot of success in reducing crime. Ray Kelly, Bill Bratton, and Howard Safer saw crime lower throughout each of their tenures as police commissioner. By the time you came in, people said, we don't think crime could get much lower. And yet somehow crime continued to be reduced on your watch as police commissioner. These days, things are going the other way. We're seeing violent crime in New York City spike in just about every measurable category over the weekend. We saw the tragic killing of a 10-year-old boy, Justin Wallace. I mean, you can't even read the details of this story without getting a little choked up. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio was at this boy's home on Monday. This is what he said.
It is heartbreaking, but it's enraging also. Someone drove up in front of a house and started firing a weapon, not caring who would die, and a 10-year-old is gone. That can't happen in this city. And it's just disgusting. It's painful. The grief was just everywhere. This father and mother talking about all their dreams for their child, the joy he felt in life, including earlier that day. And anyone who has a child, the idea you lose your child before you're gone is just, there's no words.
I don't think anybody can disagree much with what Bill de Blasio said there, Commissioner. And I realize policing is a somewhat complex issue and there are a number of factors probably at play here. But in your view, if you had to boil it down, why are we seeing such a dramatic increase in violent crime in New York City? And what's the solution to turning it around?
Okay, so let me go back to what you started out by saying, right? You had Bill Bratton and Howard Safer before me. When I came into office, Rudy was worried about dropping crime. He said, you know, if we can get it down just 2 more percent, I dropped it almost 15% over the next year and a half, almost 15%. He walked out of office with a 63% or 65% of violent crime, a 75%, 70% in murder. And in the black community where the violent crime is the highest, the murder rate dropped almost 80%. Then Ray Kelly came in after me and took it down you know, to the lowest point in the history of New York City. And you know how we did that? We did that, all of us, me, Ray Kelly, Bratton and Safer, Giuliani, leading on, under Giuliani and Bloomberg. We accomplished that by not defunding the police. We accomplished that by not taking 600 anti-crime plainclothes cops off the streets of New York City. We did that by sending the police out to do a job and supporting them when they did that job and making sure the prosecutors were prosecuting instead of victimizing the thugs and villainizing the cops. We did that by making sure that the courts were operating correctly. Giuliani held their feet to the fire. That's how that was accomplished. And when I listened to the mayor, I agree with everything Mayor de Blasio said, and that's probably a first. However, it's his fault. It's his fault because he defunded. It's his fault because he took those cops off the streets when they never should have. It's his fault because he supported Black Lives Matter over the New York City Police Department. It's his fault because he took a light approach on Antifa when they were burning down the city. And everybody knows it, especially the thugs.
I can't disagree with anything you're saying there. Not that I have your level of expertise. A lot of people eager to chat with you at 800-848-9222. Let's say hello to Brad in the Bronx. Brad, what's your question for Commissioner Carrick?
Yes. Hello, Commissioner Carrick. I have a question pertaining to the election. In the run-up to the election, there was so much concern about the possibility of fraudulent ballots being inserted. And my question is, the Department of Justice has an election monitoring division. The federal, the FBI has agents that specialize in election fraud. So with hindsight being 2020, when Republican poll watchers were literally being sometimes assaulted and illegally thrown out of the critical swing state locations, why were not federal personnel from the FBI, from the Department of Justice, and federal marshals not sent to those key critical locations? So with hindsight being 2020, what federal personnel do you think should have been sent, and why were they not sent?
You know what, Brad, that's a really good question, and you're right in the fact that, you know, there should have been a response when this stuff was going on, and it was documented. There were several of these areas, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Detroit, where the Democratic-controlled, polling stations basically threw out the Republican observers, would not let them back in. In fact, forget the FBI and in the Justice Department for a minute. You know, there was in Philadelphia, we had our people thrown out. They went to court. They got an order from a judge. The judge says, go back with the order. They have to let you in. They still refused to let them in. We called the sheriff to enforce the order, and the sheriff said, no, I'm not enforcing the order. You know what? That demonstrates a completely corrupt system from the court down. And, why didn't the Justice Department do what they should have done? I can't say, but I have a better question. Why didn't the FBI investigate in the aftermath? There was plenty of evidence to begin an investigation, and Attorney General Barr decided not to. He said he wasn't going to investigate. Why? I can't answer it.
Chris is in Manhattan. Chris, what's your question for Commissioner Carrick?
Hi. Thank you for the program. I heard something that you rarely hear and needs to be said more. There was a mention made of these polecat skunks in the swamp. They mentioned Kissinger, and they mentioned people like that.
Yeah, I think the commissioner meant Adam Kitzinger, the congressman, not Kissinger, the Secretary
Kissinger,
of State.
Right.
Exactly. Well, Kissinger is a jerk. I know who he is. Chris Hitchens, one of our leading investigative reporters, Seymour Hersh have called him Hitchens a war criminal. Seymour Hersh has written a detailed book.
All right, so Chris, what's your question exactly?
It's not a question. It's that we have to...
All right, well, I just want to get to some other folks that have some questions here. Matt in New Jersey, what's your question for Commissioner Carrick?
Hey, good evening, guys. Frank, this is Matt in New Jersey by way of Staten Island, just to let you know.
Most of New Jersey seems to be from Staten Island, as far as I can tell.
Vice versa.
A couple of quick commentary and a quick question. But the question is about the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court not hearing the cases that were brought by, you know, Giuliani's people. I think they basically ripped the Constitution up is my comment there, but I would like your thought process on that. And then the other thing, too, is I don't know why you guys all have Twitter and Facebook pages today. We aided and abetted by being involved with those organizations, what they did to Trump prior to the election was a disgrace. They continue to do selective editing. And I think by having a page with Facebook and Twitter is aiding and abetting what these people represent. And frankly, I shut mine down before the election.
All right. Commissioner, why are you still on Facebook? Why are you still on Twitter?
Okay, let me touch on the court thing real quick before I do that. And I agree that the courts in many circumstances didn't do their job, especially in the case brought by Ken Paxton out of Texas. I was shocked that the Supreme Court would not hear the case. But we heard this same argument not only in the getting to the Supreme Court, but in the state courts, Frank. A lot of these state courts, they basically sent it back to the state saying, look, this isn't a court issue. This is a legislative issue. And that's why I'm more than angry at the Republican state legislators that didn't investigate and then went out and certified a fraudulent count, because the courts themselves was pushing it back on them. Why do I have a Twitter and a Facebook? Because I have almost 400,000 followers that I can tell exactly what I'm talking about now. I still get to put it out. When they shut me down, when they turn me off, then I'll move on to another platform. But until then, somebody has to get the message out. Somebody has to talk about what's going on, you know, how it happened, why it happened. And I'm going to continue to do that. And anybody that looks at my Twitter or my Facebook or any of my social media, that's what it's all about.
All right. We're going to continue with Commissioner Carrick in just a minute. 800-848-9222, 1-800-848-WABC. When we come back, I'm going to ask about the mayor's race. I'll see if the commissioner thinks any of the mayoral candidates are saying the right things when it comes to policing and crime in New York City. This is The Other Side of Midnight. My guest for the hour, the one and only Bernard Carrick.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. My guest for the hour has been the one and only Bernard Carrick. Before we get out of here, we'll squeeze in a few more of your questions at 1-800-848-9222. Before we get to your calls, though, I have a question, Commissioner. You know, you witnessed the Giuliani revolution when it came to policing in this city 30 years ago. You have some candidates, most notably Maya Wiley, running for mayor this year that seem to be unabashed in wanting to do the precise opposite of what happened back in the mid-1990s. What's your view of the candidates running for mayor this year? Anybody saying anything that you strongly like? Anybody saying anything that really frightens you?
Yeah, everybody on the Democratic side basically scares the hell out of me because they have no idea what they're talking about. They're pandering to the radical left in many cases, and their policies will absolutely take the city into an abyss. On the Republican side, Curtis Sliwa, Mateo, these guys, you know, they're talking about stuff that could be done, should be done. But I want your audience, Frank, to think of this for a second. Nobody wants to live, visit, work, go to school in a town where there's no safety and security. Nobody's building new businesses and bringing in new companies to a town that's not secure. Nobody's bringing in, you know, new schools and you know, a flagship Apple store into a community where mothers are putting their babies to bed in bathtubs because they're afraid of random gunfire. The number one issue to turning New York City back to where it used to be is crime reduction. That's the number one issue. So whoever comes into that office, if they don't have that as first and foremost on their plate, then you can forget the city as we know it, as we knew it. When Giuliani came in, there were 2,200 murders a year. When Ray Kelly walked out as police commissioner, there were 371. That number had decreased over a 20-year period, probably close to 90%. In the aftermath of Ray Kelly leaving and Bloomberg leaving, de Blasio, under his leadership, was the first time in 20 years we saw increases in violent crime, shootings, and murders. You're going to continue to see that if you don't change the policies.
Let me say hello to Dara, who's calling from upstate. Dara, what's your question for Commissioner Carrick?
Hey, Bernie, I'd like to know where you were on January 6th during the D.C. resurrection. And as a convicted felon, if the FBI has questioned you regarding your participation in actions that day.
I was in Washington, D.C. on January 6th. I was with the mayor, and I actually went to the president's speech. I left the president's speech early. We went back to the Willard Hotel, and no, the FBI is not questioned.
And I'll point out, just for everyone's edification, that once you're pardoned, you're actually no longer a convicted felon. Andrea is in New Jersey. Andrea, what's your question for the commissioner?
Yes, thank you. I'd like to know, what do you think is two questions? One would be the impact of legalizing marijuana in terms of the crime rate in the city. And also, how do you clean up? What do you do with these homeless people on the streets of New York City since they shut down so many psychiatric facilities?
Two good questions, Andrea. Thank you.
I didn't hear the first one.
The impact of legalization of marijuana on crime in New York and elsewhere.
Well, I think it's time will tell to see where that goes. I haven't paid much attention to it. But the bigger issue for me right now is the homeless issue, because it continues to grow. And here's the bottom line. Homeless people shouldn't be on the streets of the city. It's dangerous. It's dangerous. It's, you know, it's not healthy. We had a mechanism to deal with that in the Giuliani administration. They either went to a clinic, they went to a hospital, they went to a shelter, or if they were engaged in criminal conduct, they got locked up and they got the help they needed when that happened. You cannot leave people on the streets. And especially in the winter months, I looked over, over the cold months this last year, hundreds, if not thousands of people in cardboard boxes all over the city. It was disgusting. I've never seen the city, even when I was a cop, Frank, I never saw the city like it is now. I don't know why they're not dealing with it. It's a problem that has to be dealt with and can be dealt with. And we dealt with it during the Giuliani and the Bloomberg years. Why they're not doing it, they just outright refuse, I don't know.
Commissioner, the hour has just flown by. A lot of you have a lot of fans on this radio station, obviously. A lot of folks, big fans of your weekend radio show when you had it here. A lot of folks might be wondering what you're up to these days. Are you doing anything with respect to the media these days? Where can folks hear or read your wit and wisdom?
No, just, follow me on Twitter, Bernard Carrick, or Newsmax.com. I write, I'm a contributor for Newsmax. And that's the best way to find me.
All right. Commissioner Bernard Kerik, I very much appreciate the time this morning.
Frank, I'm going to bed.
I was going to try and get you to stay around for one more hour.
But... yeah, forget it. Forget it.
Thank you. Bernard Kerik, always a treat to be able to talk with him. If you want to comment, actually, we're not going to have an opportunity for you to comment because we are moving on. I'll bring you the news in just a minute. And then next hour, Bill Burns is going to join me for an hour. This is long form interview week. Every night this week or every morning this week, I'm going to have a different guest or a series of guests on for a full hour. That'll allow me an opportunity to ask some questions, and it'll allow you to call in with an opportunity to ask some questions. Now, Bill Burns is an author and one of America's leading authorities when it comes to UFOs. And with the report coming out this month from the Pentagon, I can't wait to talk with Bill Burns about what he thinks is in this report. So we'll welcome your questions and your commentary on that. You know, it's funny. I announced yesterday that I was going to be doing long form interview week this week. And then next week, my plan was to do no guests. But right when I said that, I got a text message at the time from the owner of our radio station, John Katzimatidis, who said, well, you know, I don't know if that sounds that interesting for people in 36 states. No guests for 4 hours. So we may revise that for next week. We'll see how it goes. Maybe we'll try it for a day or two and see how it goes. And then if it doesn't work well, we may bring back some interesting guests. Bill Burns joins me next hour. Keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
1071 WLIR-FM Hampton Bays and 77 WABC. This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Other Side of Midnight. Well, for I guess the last 6 or 7 months, we've been waiting eagerly for the Pentagon to release this report about what exactly these objects in the sky that everybody seems to be seeing, which no one can explain, which are doing movements that nobody's ever seen before, what exactly they are. Some of us were hoping for the best. A lot of us had very measured expectations. And then last week, the headline in the New York Times really says it all. And when I say it says it all, this tells you exactly what we're in store for in this forthcoming Pentagon report. Headline, U.S. finds no evidence of alien technology in flying objects, but can't rule it out either. Now, the interesting thing to me about that headline is it says almost nothing. So, as we're awaiting the full report from the Pentagon, I thought it might behoove us to talk with a gentleman who's a real expert in this and has been studying it for many years, and that is New York Times best-selling author Bill Burns. He's written many books. I'm not going to list all of them, each one is fascinating, including The Day After Roswell. He's been the publisher of UFO Magazine and the editor of the UFO Encyclopedia. He's one of the most sought-after experts in the world on this subject, and I'm thrilled he's agreed to spend an hour with us this morning. Bill, thank you so much for joining me on the radio.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Frank. Good to be here.
Bill, so I don't know where to begin. I guess let's begin with that New York Times article. What was your reaction to that, the coverage of that UFO report that essentially we don't know what these objects are, we don't think they're alien, but we can't say they're not alien?
That's what I expected they'd say, because they prefigured the report. The person who prefigured that report, and I think that's more important than the report itself, was Barack Obama. I mean, compare Barack Obama's two foundational statements about UFOs. The first one he made, he was joking about Roswell, right? Ha, 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 these people are so crazy, they're still talking about Roswell. He joked about that years ago. Then when he was on Jimmy Fallon, Fallon asked him, didn't they brief you about UFOs? And Obama said, they told me not to talk about that. That's very compelling. Now, just a few weeks ago, he says, yeah, UFOs are real. UAPs, he called them.
Yeah, in fact, we have that audio. Let me play a portion of the audio in his interview with James Corden on that subject.
What is true, and I'm actually being serious here, is that there's footage and records of objects in the skies that we don't know exactly what they are. We can't explain how they moved, their trajectory.
What do we read from those comments?
Well, we read this, that there's an acknowledgement of the reality that what you see on video, Obama just said, what you see on video from 2014, 2019, these are real events. They're not hoaxes. They're not mistakes. They're real things. And the objects, he says, are real objects. He doesn't know what they are. He doesn't know how they fly. He only knows that when you understand what you're looking at, they're performing feats that our own conventional aircraft can't perform. The Pentagon report went a little further and said they not only are these not conventional, they don't believe that they're test objects, and that's where I want to get to, that they're not test planes, they're not ours, they're not military test craft. They could be test craft from other nations. If I were you, and other nations were able to send craft like that into a very restricted military area, that's the San Diego Naval Base, Frank. That's highly restricted. And if you approach there, I was once there when I was working with a couple of DEA agents. They said, you want to go see the naval base close up? I said, sure. So we took their DEA boat out to the naval base. We were swarmed by security guards on the water. So it's a very secure base. Anyway, they're doing this, right? And if these are foreign powers, if these are Chinese drones or Russian drones, I mean, we're in deep trouble because they penetrated our airspace. They broke the radar locks. They moved so quickly, the F-18 Hornets couldn't engage. In other words, they would have dominance over the skies in our own territory, off our own coast. That's why I don't think they are from a foreign government.
Okay, well,
why? Because we would have freaked out and scrambled more planes than just to shoot them down.
No doubt, no doubt. And I want to follow up with you more on that a little bit later. But so far, we've just gotten this preview of the report from the New York Times. What are you actually expecting in the report itself? Anything at all in it that will be give any meat to, I don't know, what these objects are and how the military has interacted with them?
No. What I think we'll see is something like this. We basically know they're real, they're there, they're very advanced aeronautically. We can't determine whose they are and where they're from, but here's the big but. They believe it is not a military threat. That's what's going to be in the report. And as such, it's going to be like a rehash of what Blue Book once said. Yeah, there are these cases, these 15, 20 cases we can't explain. Clearly, there's no conventional explanation for them, but we don't see them as a threat. This is the exact same thing that was said back in 1969.
If people have questions, by the way, for Bill Burns, this is the man to ask, to pose all your UFO questions to. You can call in at 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Bill, do we know who is actually responsible for compiling and putting this report out there? They say it's the Pentagon and intelligence agencies, but what does that actually mean? I can't imagine that the Secretary of Defense is putting this together himself. Who is responsible for the crafting of this report as far as you're aware?
Well, my my guess would be DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency. It wouldn't be the CIA, it wouldn't be the NSA, it would be the DIA. That's a Defense Intelligence Agency because they're a military intelligence agency. That's their job. So I believe this is foundationally a DIA report, and they've just collected film and military experiences from members of the military. But when you consider this report, look at the vast UFO history they're not covering. They're not covering the Rendlesham Forest event. They're not covering the UFOs that invaded the Washington, D.C. airspace. They're not covering Roswell. They're not covering some of the historic cases because they're really focused on the videos and the current cases. I'll tell you the most incredible, the most important thing to me, which I speculate we will someday find out. The British Intelligence Service, the British military, the MOD, Ministry of Defense, once said that it had no records of UFOs when they were purging UFO records because they passed all their records along to private industry. So if you ask them for freedom of information, what they're going to say very basically is, oh, we don't have anything because they already gave it away. The same thing happened when John Podesta, yes, that John Podesta, and Leslie Kane sued NASA for information about NASA's role in the 1965 Kecksburg, Pennsylvania crash, and NASA said it had no records. Of course it had no records. It passed everything. It released everything to private industry. Here's what I believe. When the military says that these craft aren't ours, they're being absolutely true, Frank. They're not military craft. They're test craft from private aerospace companies that are testing their craft over military areas. That's what I believe. They are ours, but they're not our military.
Interesting. Interesting. Now, do you believe, and I think I know your answer to this, do you believe that we can trust the veracity of what's in this Pentagon report?
To a certain extent, we can. When they say, yeah, these are things we can't explain, trust that. When they're saying, yeah, these things are real, the pilots encountered them, you're seeing the videos, you can trust that. You can't trust they're saying these aren't ours. Well, you can't trust they're saying, oh, they could be from a foreign government. They couldn't be from a foreign government.
So when they,
we'd be at war right now if they were from a foreign government.
Well, no, I certainly agree with that. But when they say we don't know what these objects are, if that's what's in the report, is that true from what you can tell?
I think that's a lie. I think they know what the objects are, but officially they don't. What they did was they passed all the UFO materials into private industry. Let private industry work on it. It was very closely held, but it was like our development of the atomic bomb back in the 1940s. It was very private, very closely held, but the government could say rightfully, they're not our military. These are not military test weapons.
We're talking with.
They could be from Grumman, they could be from Lockheed, they can be from anywhere, but they're not from our military.
We're talking with Bill Burns, New York Times bestselling author of The Day After Roswell, publisher of UFO Magazine, and the editor of the UFO Encyclopedia. If you have questions, he's got answers. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. We're going to continue with Bill Burns throughout the hour. I'm going to ask a little bit more about some of the things President Obama has said on this subject, and we'll delve into what other presidents may have known on this subject throughout the hour, in addition to fielding your questions. I do want to encourage you, if you have questions about how to deal with chronic pain, you shouldn't, because I'm going to give you the answer right now. Trinity Rehab. These are the folks that will restore your freedom to live your life pain-free. Don't be fooled. It's not like any sort of physical therapy you've heard about before or that you've experienced. It's not your father's physical therapy. It's cutting edge, state of the art stuff. They have something called the EPAT machine. This is FDA approved, non-surgical acoustic pressure wave technology, similar to what's used to break up kidney stones. It breaks up scar tissue. It enhances healing and gets rid of pain fast. It's effective for conditions like back or neck pain, tennis elbow, shoulder tendonitis, plantar fasciitis, and knee pain. In just 3 5-minute sessions, you could be virtually pain-free. There isn't any prescription needed to get started. They're all over New Jersey. In Clifton, Paramus, Wayne, Short Hills, Emerson, East Windsor, Shrewsbury, and even a brand new location in Woodbridge. Call Trinity Rehab today at 800-518-0977. That's 800-518-0977, or go to trinity-rehab.com.
The Other Side of Midnight presents The Midnight Files.
Midnight in the desert, shooting stars across the sky. This magical journey will take us on a ride, filled with the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it till tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you?
Midnight. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano, talking about the expected UFO report from the Pentagon. This was a result of the COVID stimulus bill. Senator Rubio and others on both sides of the aisle inserted a provision into the COVID stimulus bill that President Trump subsequently signed, mandating that the Pentagon and the intelligence community was going to have to disclose to the public exactly what it knows about UFOs. We've been talking with Bill Burns. He's a New York Times bestselling author with several books on this subject. We're taking your calls at 1-800-848-9222. Marty is in Maplewood, New Jersey. Marty, what's your question for Bill Burns?
Good morning, Frank. You never fail to outdo yourself. Tremendous program. Am I understating the whole issue by saying it's much ado about nothing?
Yes, you are stating it correctly.
Okay. And I'd like for you to, when you talk about Barack Obama together with UFOs, I'd like you possibly, and I've never seen this, and I just thought of it, to call it BAFO, Barack Obama Flying Objects. And I think that'll put it in a proper context, because what he says, oh, I want to be very serious about this thing. It's almost like someone saying, oh, I want to be honest with you. I mean, it just shows the futility and the silliness of it. I want to thank you again for everything.
Thank you, Marty. Appreciate it. And now, Bill, you're actually quoted in the New York Daily News today in Linda Stacy's column, and you've indicated that what President Obama did on TV was to lay the groundwork for President Biden to spill the beans. Now, do I surmise by that quote in the Daily News today that you believe both President Biden and President Obama are fully in the know about extraterrestrial visits to this planet and or UAP technology being adopted by other defense contractors?
I think they're in the know about a lot of things. I mean, this is why Harry Reid, remember, this report, all of it, and the videos that were released, that's the work of former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. Harry Reid was in the know. Why? Where is he the senator from? Nevada. What's in Nevada? Area 51. Harry Reid is the senator in whose district there is Area 51. Therefore, Harry Reid, knowing the importance of Area 51 in American political history, I mean, it was Kennedy's revelation JFK's revelation to Marilyn Monroe, taped by J. Edgar Hoover and Alan Dulles, of the existence of Area 51 and the things from outer space that were being kept there and the little men from outer space that were there. It's all in a memo. When they saw that, that was when they said he was talking not only out of school, his pillow talk was talking about the most classified thing the United States had. So what presidents know, if you look at this thing, it's Harry Truman goes in front of the press in 1950 and says, these are flying saucers. We know what they are. That's unbelievable disclosure. JFK discloses it. And, of course, Barack Obama did the same thing. He's saying, yeah, there are UAPs. They are real. We know that they're real. We can't explain where they're from. We can't explain who made them. We can't explain how they fly. We don't think they're ours. We're pretty sure they're not our military. And they could be foreign military, which they can't be, by the way. And they could be, we don't think they're aliens from outer space, but we don't know that they're not. So it's a basic know-nothing report.
President Obama, and if people have questions, by the way, you can give us a call, 1-800-848-9222. It's 1-800-848-WABC. President Obama was on Ezra Klein's podcast talking a little bit more about this and talking about what effect, if these are aliens, that would have on American domestic politics. Here's a snippet of what he said.
It wouldn't change my politics at all, right? Because my entire politics is premised on the fact that we are these tiny organisms on this little speck floating in the middle of space.
And then he went on to say that he hopes that if it is aliens, that it would bring the country together, but he's fearful that it would only continue to sow division in this country.
In other words, he said the same thing that Ronald Reagan said, that what if the United States was faced with a threat from the aliens? Wouldn't we come together and just forget our petty differences? That's what Reagan said in front of the United Nations General Assembly, and that's what he said he said to Gorbachev when they met in Reykjavik, Iceland. So Obama's basically saying the same thing, except that he's saying that the knowledge that there are aliens, that there are extraterrestrials, won't change his vision of Earth. I think it will. I think he knows it will, too. I think the secret is far deeper, far more important, and that's why there's been this cover-up. Do you realize that when this country was being founded in the 1770s, Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, and Thomas Jefferson all believed in extraterrestrials?
I did not realize that, but I can't say that I'm surprised. If that is President Obama's belief, let's say, if President Obama is in the know on this stuff, if President Biden was in the know, and if President Trump was in the know, why would none of these three men come forward? Understanding during the Cold War, maybe there are extra reasons for secrecy surrounding national security and so forth. But now, over the course of the last 15, 16 years, what's the rationale on the part of the government for keeping this knowledge a secret?
Can you imagine a secret so foundationally profound about the existence of human beings, the existence of life on Earth, and its relationship to other life forms? Can you imagine how foundational that would be if in the revelations, one revelation is how life started on this planet from them? How would the world's religions react? How would the world's governments react? How would the reaction be if there was a acknowledgement, a collective acknowledgement that we were a colony and that we were formed by a bombardment of viruses that affected the vast network of mycelium under the ground, and that as cave people ate them, it made, because of the viruses in that mycelium, it began to affect their brains in such a way that even though 250,000 years ago there might only have been 100,000 modern human breeding pairs, that fundamentally changed the human brain to the point where we learned how to use tools, we developed language, and developed community. And if that was a viral, and if that came from a viral invasion of our planet, it's the viral invasion that of the ancient aliens.
So do you believe that the United States government, for instance, putting aside the question of the knowledge, the scope of the knowledge of other governments, you believe the United States government is in possession of knowledge that that's what took place?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. When you see modern, like a Dr. Fauci, for example, Dr. Fauci's job is not to worry about where the virus came from ultimately, whether it came from outer space, which is where I think it came from.
The COVID virus.
His job is preventive medicine. He doesn't care about the theory. It's to save lives. But what if there are other doctors, and there are, who say that since this planet has been bombarded with viruses for 4 billion years, how come there's still life on this planet if viruses are so deadly? They're not. That's the point. So do I think that deep within our federal government there's an understanding of this? Yes. Do I know of people who have been physically present in front of extraterrestrials? Yes. Did the United States actually send its National Air War College class? This was after Roswell. Of 1948, to Wright Field. Now it's Wright. Now it's Wright Patterson. But then it was only Wright Field. Why did they send them to Wright Field, where, when they saw the live alien, all of the people who were in that class had to write dissertations. The dissertations were on airborne nuclear weapons to shoot down UFOs. That happened in 1948. I mean, so the government knows about this. I mean, we've had countless. So when Barack Obama says this, when the report from the Pentagon says this, it's really the trailing edge of what we know. The leading edge of what we know is far more compelling.
That's for sure. We're going to continue with Bill Burns throughout the hour. If you want to call in, you can do so. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. I have been a proud Staten Island resident my entire life. And as such, I've always known about the Staten Island law firm of Angiuli and Gentile. If you've ever suffered a workplace injury, or if you've had an occupational disease that has turned your life upside down, if you've ever asked yourself, how will I live while I'm out of work, or how will my work-related medical bills get paid? Well, those are questions that you no longer need to ask, because while those questions are overwhelming and stressful, the Staten Island law firm of Angiuli and Gentile has a lot of experience dealing with those very questions. They help take the fear out of the workers' compensation process. They're good folks who I know personally. They've represented friends of mine and family members of mine. They'll meet with you, listen to your concerns, and explain how all of this works firsthand. They'll get you the medical treatment and the workers' compensation payments that you're entitled to. The Staten Island lawyers at Angiuli and Gentile have handled thousands of hearings and will help you walk with confidence. Call Angiuli and Gentile today at 888-234-COMP. That's 888-234-COMP. They offer both in-person consultations or contactless video appointments. 888-234-COMP. That's 888-234-2667.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
For goodness sake, I got the hippie shakes. Yeah, I got the shakes. I got the hippie shakes. Oh, I can't sit still with the hippie shakes. Yeah, I feel I feel now with the hippie shakes. Yeah, in
the hippie shakes. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano, joined for the hour by Bill Burns, New York Times best-selling author. His books include The Day After Roswell. He's the publisher of UFO Magazine and the editor of the UFO Encyclopedia. We'll take your calls at 800-848-9222. Gary in Inwood, you are on with Bill Burns. What's your question?
Good evening, gentlemen. Has any modern-day president ever expressed in his desire to visit Area 51?
I'm sure presidents have done that, but they haven't done it publicly because not only is the base top secret, but it was only a couple of years ago that the CIA even admitted that that base existed, even though, I mean, I've been on that base, other people have been on that base. So, I mean, it's silly, but that's really how the intelligence agencies work. I don't know that... specifically anybody who's actually been at Area 51, but I am kind of assuming that presidents have been there.
Thank you, Gary. What was your experience like on that base exactly, Bill?
Well, first of all, the base is ringed with a sound. There are microphones all throughout the scrub brush. So when you approach the base, you're really approaching like studio microphones that are hidden in the scrub brush. There are motion sensors even before the border so that the people we would call them camo dudes, but it's the security guards in camouflage uniforms that are up on a hill. They're overlooking the base, and they can basically see everything, and their equipment in their Humvees, for example, alert them immediately if there are intruders that are encroaching upon the base. They can see it with night vision. They could see it in the daytime. You can, when we were there, you could see right into the base from Tigaboo Peak, which overlooks the entire base. And if you can climb that peak, which is tough to climb, it's like a 15, 18 degree incline. If you can, and we did it with a giant 300-millimeter long-distance lens, if you can do that, you can see the entire base at sunrise, which is very revealing because these hangars are monstrously big. And when you see trucks going, they're going underground. So a lot of the base at Area 51 is underground.
Wow. What was your impression of the 60 Minutes piece a few weeks ago in which they interviewed Lou Elizondo, David Fravor, Marco Rubio, and Christopher Mellon, among others, about the government's experiences with UFOs and UAPs?
They all said nothing. I mean, all they said was, we don't know what they are. We have to figure out more. We know they're not conventional aircraft. Thank you very much for telling us that. We could see that from the video. We know they're not conventional aircraft. We don't believe, or we know they're not our military. That's a red herring. And we don't think they're from a foreign, and they could be from foreign government. That makes no sense whatsoever. We don't think they're alien, but we can't rule it out. It's the we can't rule it out that's part of the important statement. Because they're leaving the door open for further disclosures. I mean, just imagine 3 years from now, some government statement saying, as we said in the report on UAPs, we weren't sure where these were from. Now we think there might be some kind of an alien presence. We don't know what it is. Now, you can't just say that. What do you say to all the people who claim to have been abducted by aliens? What do you say to them? You know? I mean, what do you say to the people who've had real close-up encounters? I know a lot of these individuals. I mean, they're personal friends of mine. I know what I saw back in the 1950s. I know what I saw on film over at Mount Shasta, California. The point is, you just can't say that we don't know what they are, but we know that they're here and we know that they're real and it's not swamp gas or somebody having a bad dream or somebody having some kind of a psilocybin experience. I mean, that's basically what the report is saying, that they're real, tangible objects. we don't know anything more about them. I think that's a lie. I think they do.
Just to go back to the beginning of our conversation, you indicate, look, so the Pentagon is acknowledging that these are not government aircraft responsible right. on these videos. You have said that you don't believe there's any way that there's Chinese or Russian. These are Chinese or Russian aircraft because essentially we'd be a lot more alarmed from a national security perspective than we actually are. But what actual evidence do we have that these are not the product of a foreign government, be they China, Russia, or someone else?
We would have known if the Russians were experimenting. I mean, all the governments we're talking about, our government, the Chinese, the Russians, possibly the British, are experimenting with anti-gravity. Anti-gravity theories were developed as early as the early 1940s, late 1930s. Tesla was one of the people developing them. So we've known it. When Tesla died in 1943, after he'd had received a commission from the Soviet Union to develop an anti-gravity machine, the FBI raided the New Yorker hotel room where Tesla died, seized all his records, secured them in the Office of Alien Properties, released everything to the Yugoslavian government after the war, but kept his anti-gravity records, and they went to Nathan Twining at Wright Field. Nathan Twining was head of the Air Materiel Command, first of the Army Air Force, then of the United States Air Force. He was a general. So that material went to Wright Field. So we've known about the existence of this. I think we've been working on this. I mean, when we did UFO Hunters, we used ultrasound beamed into in a narrow beam into a Faraday cage, and we were able to levitate objects just on sound alone.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's feasible to do. I think the government's been working with that for years.
Talking with Bill Burns, you can give us a call if you have questions, 800-848-9222, 1-800-848-WABC. Bill, why do, why do these crafts so often seem to either come out of the ocean or to disappear into the ocean?
Because I think that where you see these craft emerging from the ocean, there are underwater bases. That whole channel from San Diego, San Pedro, Southern California, out to Coronado Island, out to Santa Catalina, the entire area has a lot of UFO sightings. And there are theories that because we have the China Lake Naval Station, the Point Doom military facilities all along the California coast, my theory is that there are tunnels underneath for submarines. See, I think we're working with these craft, wherever they're from. I think they're ours. But we are working with them. I mean, if there were an alien invasion on planet Earth, I mean, think about the reaction to this. There's an alien invasion. Aliens are among us. They live under the water in the Pacific Ocean. They live between Florida and Cuba in the trench in the Gulf of Mexico. Imagine what level of negotiating we would have had to have done with them for them to have bases on this planet under the water.
So just so I'm clear,
emerge from the water.
Just so
if there are aliens, that's where they are.
So, Bill, when you say that some of these videos could be videos of aircraft that's being developed by private defense contractors with technology that was given to them by the United States government, which could have been alien technology, as Senator Harry Reid and others have stated that it might be. When you say there are underwater bases, do you believe those are underwater bases that are alien in nature, or do you believe those are underwater bases for some of these Lockheed Martin or defense contractors?
I believe that aliens have had bases on this planet for hundreds of thousands of years. I believe that our planet is like a truck stop. I mean, you know, like you drive along the interstate, you see a truck stop, you pull in. I think our planet is like that. I do believe we're a colony. I do believe that there are creatures that are very much like us, that are as human as we are, with extraordinary powers, however, which we possess but don't know how to use yet. And these are all part of the secret. When we were writing the day after Roswell, I was working with this person, Philip Corso, who was Army R&D, who was Lieutenant Colonel in charge of this materiel from the crash at Roswell. We were contacted. This was a motion picture company that I was working for. We were contacted by this officer from the Navy, George Hoover. George Hoover was famous because he was tasked by the Office of Naval Intelligence to write a report about the very famous Philadelphia experiment. I mean, his report was that there was no UFO, nothing paranormal. But he became very well known for that. He was so fascinated that he began to study what Corso did in the Army. And when he contacted us, he had said that he was also in the know and that each branch of the military had its own, just for want of a better term, call it a UFO contingent, a UFO division, a study group. And the Navy had one too, and he was in that study group. And here's what he said, that the Navy understood that human beings and ETs are genetically very close, but that human beings have powers, mental powers. It's not like Superman or anything. It's like mental powers that we don't know how to use. And the scary thing would be if we used them in destructive ways, which we would naturally do if we don't know how to use them. That's another reason why we would never really understand our own neurology, for example, our own neuroscience, unless we were ready. And that's also one of the reasons for the cover-up.
Just to go back to where we began the conversation with this Pentagon report, is there anything that if our listeners find themselves reading the report themselves in its entirety that they should be on the lookout from, even assuming it is what you're saying, which is largely not much? Is there anything that they can be reading between the lines for or be on the lookout for when it does come out?
Well, I would say this, that there is no urgency in this report. That's the first thing that I would talk about for folks reading it, that there really isn't any urgency, that it is so la-di-da, so everyday, so lackadaisical. I mean, look at the magnitude of this, Frank. I mean, this, what these pilots have seen, if these are extraterrestrial, and if they're here, which I think they are here, at least some of them, if that all that is true, what does that say about the nature of humanity, the nature of our place in the universe? Yet here's a report in a very blasé way saying that there are these objects hovering over our most secure installations. Our pilots are basically laughing at them. Hey, dude, look at that, right? That's what he said on the radio.
That's true.
They're almost laughing at them as if they know what they are but can't talk about it. And I would look at that and say, there's something underneath this that actually doesn't make sense.
Steve in Manhattan, you're on with Bill Burns. What's your question?
My question was, with all these sightings, how come none of them have ever landed and identified themselves? Because over time, you're talking about hundreds of sightings.
That's the deal. I mean, all the way back in 1954 was after the after Eisenhower ended the Korean War. He supposedly had a meeting. This was after, in 1952. You could see this on the internet. You could see the headline in the Washington Post. You'd see the echelon of the UFOs over the Washington Monument, by the way. UFOs was the summer of the saucers, basically. UFOs were all over the country. They were over Washington, D.C. They were over Chesapeake Bay. They were over West Virginia. We actually shot them down. There was an order in 1952, before Eisenhower was president, under Harry Truman, it was the last year in office, to shoot these objects down. When Eisenhower took office, we shot at least one of them down over West Virginia. When Eisenhower took office, he had a meeting at an Air Force base in California with a delegation of extraterrestrials, and they structured an open skies agreement. They could fly in our skies. We wouldn't shoot at them. They wouldn't shoot at us. They would look at us. But it was basically a hands-off open skies agreement.
Bill, what's the source for that?
Because that turned around and negotiated with Khrushchev.
That's a pretty remarkable thing that there was an agreement of Eisenhower and Khrushchev with some sort of extraterrestrials to negotiate who can fly where on Earth. What is your source for that, Bill?
Well, a lot of people who were at the base. First of all, this wasn't a public meeting, by the way. This was a meeting that Eisenhower set up in secret. There were airmen at that base in the 1950s who saw Eisenhower's plane land and saw him go into a building with a delegation that was very, very secret. And afterwards, there were all these papers coming out from the Pentagon on what Eisenhower had agreed to. They were, of course, secret papers, but they came out from the Pentagon. Other generals talked about it. The cover-up was that when Eisenhower was golfing at Georgia, for example, in the state of Georgia, and they invited Mamie Eisenhower's mother, Mrs. Dowd, and it was going to be a family vacation with the Eisenhowers. And all that family vacation, that's when Eisenhower secretly flew out of Georgia, flew to California, and there were people at the airbase that saw him and were surprised because they said, I thought you were going to be in Georgia. Nobody talked about it. That was the meeting with the aliens. That was the Open Skies Agreement. Later on, I turned around and negotiated the exact same agreement with the Russians, with the Soviet Union, with the Open Skies Agreement. Because if we knew what the other side was doing and had a hands-off attitude, that would prevent hostilities. Of all the presidents we've had, you know, Ike was the most peace-loving president, even though he won World War II. Isn't that fascinating?
Well, yeah, I guess, you know, they say no one appreciates the power of a flame more than a guy that's been burned. I guess somebody that knows firsthand what's involved in war is somebody that's likely to do whatever they can to avoid it. So, Bill, assuming your prediction is accurate, which is that this UFO report doesn't say much, what then should the next mission B for disclosure activists who are listening to us right now? If people want to further the cause of information, what should they be striving for next?
First of all, if you want to really address the government about this, it's talk about certain UFO cases that don't make sense conventionally. There are hundreds and hundreds of them. There are reports all over the place about these cases. Write the government about it. Research the cases. They're certainly available. And just keep up and watch the skies. I mean, that's the other thing, too. With the prevalence of handheld iPhone cameras now and smartphone cameras, people are seeing UFOs all over the place. The prevalence of UFOs is astonishing. And folks should simply watch the skies, take pictures, go to places where they think they're going to see UFOs, and just the more information we can generate, the more pressure is on the government to come clean about what's in the skies.
1-800-848-WABC with Bill Burns for the hour. We'll try and squeeze in one or two more quick calls before we run out of time. Bill, you've written quite a bit on this subject. If people are just sort of, because of the mainstream media interest on this, 60 Minutes, New York Times, Washington Post, and so forth, just starting to express an interest in this subject and a curiosity in this subject, which of your books would you suggest is the best place to get started. What's a good primer to give folks a foundation for what has gone on in this country on this front for the last few decades?
Two books, actually. One is UFOs in the White House, because it shows how our United States government reacted to UFOs from Harry Truman all the way through Barack Obama and Donald Trump. I'm going to do an update for the book based on this report and Joe Biden. That's one book. The other book is The Big Book of UFOs. That's also from Skyhorse Publishing. That's almost like the compendium of what you need to know to start your study, your research into UFOs.
They're all by
Big Book of UFOs.
They're all by William Burns, B-I-R-N-E-S. And Bill has actually written a number of other books not related to UFOs or aliens or anything like that that have been very well received. In fact, the interview that I did with you, Bill, a couple of months ago on The Squad, J. Edgar Hoover's Secret Hit Squad, I can't even begin to tell you the feedback that I got from that. Even former New York Governor David Patterson mentioned that he heard our discussion and wasn't able to go to sleep because he wanted to keep listening to it. And our owner, our radio station's owner, John Catsimatidis, actually replayed that interview on his show as well. So you've got a lot of fans in high places, from what I could tell, Bill.
Oh, thank you, Frank.
Bill, the hour has just flown by. I want to thank you so much for the time. I very much appreciate it. And I'll look forward to the next opportunity that we can
always have my pleasure speak. Talking to my home radio station.
Exactly. And you're always welcome here anytime, Bill.
I was
thank
friends
you.
With Cousin Brucey.
He's on Saturday nights now. He's back. He's back 6 to 10.
Oh, Cousin Brucey. I loved him.
And I got to tell you, he sounds just
a sweet guy.
He sounds as good as he did 30 or 40 years ago.
Now you got me. Okay, I'm going to listen to Cousin Brucey.
Wonderful. Thanks, Saturday man. Nights, 6 to 10. That's Bill Burns. Check him out on Amazon or wherever you get your books. William, B-I-R-N-E-S. You find me on Twitter, at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. I will tell you, so I don't know how I pulled this off because I'm far from a social media star. I'd like to be a social media star, and hopefully I can, because hopefully you guys will follow me there at Frank Morano, Frank M-O-R-A-N-O. I'm verified on Twitter, right? I believe, and now they've just brought back Twitter that you can apply to be verified by Twitter. And neither Juliet Huddy nor Sid Rosenberg, who have many, many more thousands of followers than I do, neither of them are verified. I don't know why, but they're not. Verified, all it means is you have a blue check. It doesn't give you any special powers. But Juliet was telling me how she tried to apply, maybe I'll ask her about this when she comes, to be verified again and didn't have any luck getting verified. I believe that if you're like me and you're actually verified on Twitter, you should have some special privileges that regular Twitter people don't get. For instance, the most obvious one is an edit button, because there's nothing worse on Twitter when you tweet something and then people are retweeting it and clicking like and so forth and responding to it. And then you realize that you made a typo or something, or you made a grammatical error, or a syntax error, or a punctuation error, and you want to go back and edit it, but you can't. You have to delete it. Now, you don't want to delete it, because then you lose the 50 retweets that you have and all the comments to that people have responded to. I think that those of us who are verified should have the privilege of editing our tweets. Tell me what you think. 800-848-9222. And I got to tell you, I don't know what is going on in this Facebook group that we've established. You've got to go on, to see what I'm talking about. Go on Facebook and type Morano Radio Fans and Haters. This is supposed to be a fun discussion group of subjects related to the show. It's turned into this warring faction of people that really genuinely dislike one another. And now they email me throughout the day, trying to ban this person, ban that person, talk to this person. Guys, you got to work this out amongst yourselves. I do not have the time, nor the energy, nor the desire to police this Facebook group. So chill out and keep asking questions.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Well, hey, some good news on the COVID front. And I don't like to spend too much time talking about COVID because that's all we've been doing for, I don't know, the last year, the last 15 months. So as it stands now, some good news coming out of New York State today. I consider it good news. Most remaining COVID-19 restrictions will be lifted when 70% of adult New Yorkers have received at least one dose of the COVID vaccine. According to the governor's office, we're only 1.4% away from hitting that goal. And then the governor added, get vaccinated. Well, that's encouraging. We can do away with some of these remaining restrictions if that's the case. I'll tell you, I was listening to the Cats at Night show last night. And they were interviewing Bill O'Reilly. John Catsimatidis and Lydia Serrani are interviewing Bill O'Reilly, who you can hear every night at 9 p.m. He made quite a bit of news yesterday, too. He's embarking on this series of tours with former President Trump. That's going to be interesting. I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming both O'Reilly and Trump are getting paid for that. I know O'Reilly's getting paid. And I would assume Trump's getting paid, too. I would think that has the potential to be pretty lucrative. But Bill O'Reilly was on with John Catsimatidis and Lydia Serrani last night. And she started to talk about Dr. Anthony Fauci and so forth. This is what Lydia asked Bill O'Reilly. Go ahead.
Now, speaking of lies, Dr. Fauci, he's been caught lying multiple times via the emails.
Wait, Lydia. I haven't caught Dr. Fauci lying. I read his emails. I didn't see any. A lie is an intentional deception based on information that you have and you don't put forth. So, you know, I tell my left-wing friends, if you're going to believe these news agencies that cater to you, you're going to be in trouble. I'm going to tell my right-wing friends the same thing. Fauci is a creature of politics. It was absurd to label him the science. I never once on my program on WABC or on my television program on the No Spin News, which is now all over the United States, never one time did I take anything that man said and reported it as fact. Why? Because I knew he was doing exactly what I just told you the New York Times reporters do. He was saying to the American people what he was told to say behind the scenes.
What I was talking about is he said that no money went to the Wuhan lab for gain-of-function research. And then we're finding out...
Yeah, how does he know?
Well, that now we're finding out that it did. And I'm bringing it up because John Catsimatidis got this great interview. We're going to be speaking with Senator Rand Paul. So it's really, he's the one guy that's really been holding Fauci's feet to the fire.
Absolutely. But when Paul comes on, he hasn't been on yet, right?
No, he'll be on right after you.
Okay. So for me, and he doesn't like me very much, so I don't know whether he wants you to mention my name. But if he's going to say that Fauci intentionally was deceptive and misled this country about COVID, he got to come up with, all I want is one, that Fauci knew that American tax money was directed into this Wuhan lab by whoever. He's got to name the person. And then he's got to say, here's how I know this.
Now, this is why I really do like O'Reilly and give him credit, because he's he really is intellectually honest. He's a straight shooter. He's not going to sit there and allow Lydia to call Dr. Fauci a liar with no evidence. So then now I'm hooked. And by the way, that's our 77 WABC clip of the day. That was courtesy of the Cats at Night show last night, which you could hear every day from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. with John Catsimatidis and Lydia Serrani. So then Now I'm hooked, right? This was a major distraction. I made the mistake of putting this show on while I was in my backyard trying to do work. I was having a cigar, which I try to rarely do during the week because it does screw up my voice a little bit. But my sister-in-law, Sarah, had given me this great cigar that I was eager to smoke over the weekend. And I didn't get to smoke it. And it was nice weather. I said, let me do my computer work outside and let me keep the station on while I'm preparing for my show and stuff. And now I'm hooked. Now I'm totally distracted from doing my own work. I'm just listening to the Cats at Night show. And Rand Paul was on right after O'Reilly. And so Rand Paul basically does call Fauci dishonest.
I think for over a year, he's been not telling the truth about whether or not his group, the NIH, was funding research in the Wuhan lab. They were doing this research they call gain of function research. This is a research where they take an animal virus, they juice it up to make it more infectious to humans. I think that's a terrible idea. He still says they didn't fund it. And yet the bat scientist from Wuhan, when you look at her paper, she says, thank you, Dr. Fauci. And she lists the NIH number, listing in detail where she got the money. We're going to find out that there's actually even more money than they've said. But to make matters worse, when people started asking, could this virus have come from the Wuhan lab? Guess who he appointed to investigate it? His friend, Peter DeZonk, who he had given the money to. So Peter DeZonk is head of EcoHealth Alliance. NIH, Dr. Fauci, gave this guy money. They gave the money to Wuhan. When it all came together, this Peter DeZonk was sending emails privately back and forth to Dr. Fauci, and they're saying, oh, thank goodness you've protected me on this. And the letter we're going to send, we're going to get a lot of scientists. We won't sign it, so it doesn't look like we're self-interested. They were plotting this whole thing and planning this whole thing. Why? Because if it looks like the virus got out of the lab and it looks like the U.S. is funding it, don't you think people might be justifiably angry at Dr. Fauci? But he was asked last week in committee by John Kennedy, the senator from Louisiana. He asked him, do you still trust the Chinese scientists? And Dr. Fauci said yes. I think simply because of that lack of judgment or naivete, he should no longer be in government. So I'd fire him. I'd have him gone tomorrow. Pack your stuff, put it in a box. You're gone.
Couple of things there based on what Rand Paul said. One, I agree that it is a terrible idea. And again, this is not a political thing at all. I don't understand why people would disagree with this. I think it's a terrible idea to fund gain of function research anywhere in the United States or elsewhere. We should not be funding to create these super viruses, bottom line. So I completely agree with Rand Paul on that. Two, when he says it was a tremendous amount of naivete on Anthony Fauci's part to continue to trust the Chinese scientists, I agree with that as well. And I think that is a naivete that should indicate that he should not be in this position. I think they should get rid of him precisely for that reason. I will also agree with Rand Paul that that fellow, Peter, whatever his name is the wrong person to investigate whether or not this COVID was the result of a lab leak. That being said, so I agree with Rand Paul on the four fundamental things that he said. But he mentioned in those comments there that Fauci is sticking with his story of saying they never funded this. They are saying, the NIH is saying, they never funded this gain-of-function research. So what Rand Paul didn't answer was Bill O'Reilly's question. How does he know? Now, Rand Paul sort of implies that he knows because of these emails, that the emails indicate gratitude for Anthony Fauci funding it. But the emails are far from a smoking gun, from what I can tell. And I agree with O'Reilly's analysis. If you're going to say that he was intentionally dishonest, you have to explain where in those emails he says that, because the emails don't say that. From what I can read and from what O'Reilly's reading of it is. And O'Reilly's a pretty smart guy. So, again, I think they should get rid of Fauci. It's clear he hasn't handled this well. There's been a lot of conflicting messaging, and I don't fault him entirely on that. They call it the novel coronavirus for a reason. None of us really knew how to address this from the beginning. So it's easy for those of us in the peanut gallery to question all the experts, but it's clear that whether it's my problem is they so dismissed this lab leak theory as this crackpot conspiracy theory. And Facebook prohibited you from even posting about it on social media. So now it's looking increasingly likely that there's some validity to this lab leak theory. Maybe it was zoonotic in nature. Maybe it was a lab leak. We may never know. I sincerely hope that we do to prevent it in the future. But I want to ask you a question. At 1-800-848-WABC. Let's say this was the result of a lab leak. Let's say this was created in a lab by Chinese scientists in Wuhan, and it escaped from the lab. And China did whatever they could to cover this up and lied to the world about it. How should China make this up to the world? What should be the penalty for China? What sort of reparations should they have to pay? 800-848-9222. That's my question for you.
A question. Since before your sun burned hot in space and before your race was born, I have awaited a question.
Because we do have to be careful here. For starters, though, look, China should have to pay some sort of penalty here, because right now the 21st century is very much looking like the Chinese century. They're going to space. They're going to Mars. They're expanding all over the globe. They're doing all sorts of stuff. They're becoming a world leader in industry after industry. They're doing this Belt and Road Initiative. They're keeping Hollywood studios from releasing movies in China if it depicts anybody from the Chinese government as being negative. They're oppressing Hong Kong. They're oppressing Taiwan. They're oppressing their own people in mainland China. They're oppressing everybody. So there's got to be some sort of penalty. You cannot be the cause of a global pandemic and then still run roughshod all over the economic world, manipulating your currency and controlling access to your market of a billion people. So there's got to be some sort of penalty for China. However, these are the two things that we need to be careful of. One is you can't cripple China. Even if there was an effort by the United States and all the Western countries to hold China accountable, you can't totally cripple them economically. For two reasons. One, right now, the United States is very dependent on China. We're very dependent on China as a lender to us, to the United States government. We're also very dependent on China as a supplier of so many goods that are sold in the United States. So you can't devastate this country economically. Because right now, we're in a very codependent relationship with China. We need the money they're lending us, number one, and we need the products they're selling us, number two, to do away with that. If the country were to become so economically crippled, would totally disrupt the supply chain in this country. The other reason that you can't force China to pay the worldwide reparations for this virus is we need to learn of what happened with the Germans and World War I. Germany, and there are a lot of similarities here, Germany was forced to completely accept the responsibility for the war, pay reparations, and the reparations they paid so devastated them, led them to be such a nation of poverty that a populist strongman like Adolf Hitler and the Nazis were able to come to power on the promise of restoring the German Empire to its former glory. Now, the Chinese people have even a prouder heritage than the German people did at that time. So if you're going to cripple China economically, you are setting the stage for a Hitler-style strongman to come to power to rescue that country of a billion people who are used to taking a lot of pride in their history. You are setting the stage for a Hitler-style strongman to come to power. I firmly believe that. So with those two caveats, whether you accept my premise or not, with those two caveats of why we can't completely destroy the Chinese economy, even if it's shown that they are responsible for creating this in a lab and then further responsible for compounding that guilt by lying to America and to the international health authorities about this, and their own people, by the way, then what do we do? How should we hold China accountable? What should the penalties be? 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. James is in Westchester. Hello, James.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well, James. Thanks.
Good to hear. Yeah, so, I was listening to your program. You know, I think I'm pretty left-leaning, probably a lot more so than any of your listeners are. And I do think that, even despite that, I do think that China, there's a lot of problems with China. And I do think that changes need to be made. Honestly, I think that probably the best solution is to work with our allies and work together to put pressure on them, because that is a unilateral effort. I mean, what did Trump do, right? He put tariffs in probably the most childish, like, single-sided way that it was completely ineffective. And we had to give billions of dollars to farmers who were being hurt by Trump's tariffs with China. It was completely ineffective.
Well, James, we could have a whole conversation about tariffs and the economy, but the tariffs were not done to be retaliatory towards China for their role in COVID. So let's assume, you know, that China is responsible for a lab leak here. What should the penalty be, if any, for China?
Well, I think that if they were found to be responsible for COVID, if it were to actually have come from a lab, which, you know, I'd like to see some evidence of that before we, like, really start pushing that as a narrative. But I think that, again, the best route to, would be to work with our allies to put pressure on them and then just unilaterally sanction and condemn their actions.
Okay. Well, so that makes sense, right? It makes sense from a moral point of view and an ethical point of view. But how do we sanction China in a manner that that makes it so that the other countries that are so economically dependent on China, both as a market, as a supplier, and a lender, as the United States happens to be, how do we sanction them without hurting our own economy?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think that we need to bolster our own businesses and manufacturing within our country. I think there's ways to do that that don't cripple our own economy and China's economy. But we're far too dependent on it, and we look past their moral atrocities that they're committing against Muslims because we're so dependent on their cheap labor, and because of the worship that we have to corporations in this country. We allow that to happen. I mean, I think that we need to change corporate culture.
Oh, well, I agree completely with you on that front. James, thanks for the call. 800-848-9222. Let me just respond to one thing James said, and then I'm running a little late here. I'm going to take a break. But there is evidence that it did escape from a lab. So there's not a smoking gun that says it escaped from the lab, which is why we need a thorough investigation, ideally an international one. And that's the other reason why we have to be careful with what we threaten China with. Because if China knows that they're going to have their back broken if it's proven that this escaped from a lab, then they're not going to cooperate at all with us anymore. It's not to say they're cooperating very much with us now. But reports based on U.S. intelligence, and this is from an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal yesterday by Dr. Stephen Quay. Reports based on U.S. intelligence have suggested the lab in Wuhan collaborated on products, on projects with the Chinese military. But the most compelling reason, and again, this is from Dr. Quayle in the Wall Street Journal, co-written with Richard Mueller. In fact, I'm going to link to it on my Facebook page, and you could read it, facebook.com/MoranoFan, facebook.com/MoranoFan. The most compelling reason to favor the lab leak hypothesis is based in science. In particular, consider the genetic fingerprint of COV2. That is the novel coronavirus responsible for the disease COVID-19. In gain-of-function research, a microbiologist can increase the lethality of a coronavirus enormously by splicing a special sequence into its genome at a prime location. Doing this leaves no trace of manipulation, but it alters the virus spike protein, rendering it easier for the virus to inject genetic material into the victim cell. Since 1992, there have been at least 11 separate experiments adding a special sequence to the same location. The end result has always been supercharged viruses. A genome is a blueprint for the factory of a cell to make proteins. The language is made up of three-letter words, 64 in total, that represent the 20 different amino acids. I realize this gets a little bit into the weeds here. I had to read this four times to understand exactly what they're talking about. That's why I'm going to encourage you to read it if you're not following me. Facebook.com/MoranoFan. I'm going to put it up there as soon as I finish reading this portion. For example, there are six different words for the amino acid arginine, the one that's used in supercharging viruses. Every cell has a different preference for which word it likes to use most. In the case of the gain-of-function supercharge, other sequences could have been spliced into the same site. Instead of a CGG-CGG, which is known as a double CGG, that tells the protein factory to make two arginine amino acids in a row, you'll obtain equal lethality by splicing any one of the 35 of the other two-word combinations for double arginine. If the insertion takes place naturally, say through recombination, then one of those 35 other sequences is far more likely to appear. CGG is rarely used in the class of coronaviruses that can recombine with COV2. In fact, in the entire class of coronaviruses that include COV2, the CGG-CGG combination has never been found naturally. That means the common method of viruses picking up new skills called recombination cannot operate here. A virus simply cannot pick up a sequence from another virus if that sequence isn't present in any other virus. Although the double CGG is suppressed naturally, the opposite is true in laboratory work. So all I'm saying here is, and again, I want to encourage you to read this article in yesterday's Wall Street Journal. It's on my Facebook page, facebook.com/MoranoFan. All I'm saying is here, the experts seem to suggest that if you look at the molecular structure of this virus, it's much more consistent with something that was created in a lab than something that had a zoonotic origin. That's what the experts are saying. I'm not an expert. 800-848-9222. If China did allow this to leak from a lab, if this was created in a lab, and if China lied to their own people, to the United States, and to international health authorities about everything, quite frankly, what should the penalty be? How do we punish China, sanction China, as James said, without hurting our own economy? That's the question. 800-848-9222. I'll tell you one place where they're not creating any super viruses. That is Trinity Rehab. These are great folks. You know what they're creating? Freedom from pain. They have something called the EPAP machine, which is an FDA-approved, non-surgical, acoustic pressure wave technology similar to what's used to break up kidney stones, and it's great for conditions like back pain or neck pain, tennis elbow, shoulder tendonitis, plantar fasciitis, knee pain. If you have chronic pain, you don't have to anymore. Just call Trinity Rehab. In just 3 5-minute sessions with the EPAP machine, you get zapped and you're virtually pain-free. They have locations all over the state of New Jersey. Clifton, Paramus, Wayne, Short Hills, Emerson, East Windsor, Shrewsbury. Even a brand new location in Woodbridge. Get zapped with the EPAP machine. Go over to the mall. Walk around the mall all day long. You won't feel any of that neck pain, knee pain, or back pain. Call Trinity Rehab today at 800-518-0977. That's 800-518-0977. Or go to trinity-rehab.com.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Manhattan Heights can brag of lights, and Boston has its beat. But on the coast, we proudly boast about the Hollywood canteen. We're G.I. Joes, forget the woes of Army life routine. From every camp, for miles they tramp to the Hollywood canteen.
The Hollywood canteen by the Andrew Sisters. You are listening to The Other Side of Midnight. We are talking about the situation with the coronavirus. And you know what? I want to ask another question with respect to this. I saw you could handle either or both of these questions. So we're asking the question, if this has been shown to be the result of a lab-created virus, and if China did deceive the public and the world about this, what should the penalty be for China? How do we punish them without punishing ourselves? And let me ask you also this. There was an interview that the global vaccine leader, Seth Berkley, who is the leader of he's the CEO of Gavi, which helped found the international COVAX effort to secure doses for poorer countries. He is saying that richer countries like the United States have moved on to vaccinating children, while healthcare workers in many other countries still don't have enough doses to be fully vaccinated. He's saying instead of vaccinating children here in this country, we should be sending these shipments overseas to places like India so that folks in those countries can get vaccinated while they're healthcare workers. So he's saying it's a natural thing to protect one's own country first. But if you do that and the virus is continuing to spread in other places and mutates, then you all, not just your children, but the parents themselves, can be at risk of further outbreaks. That seems to look, I think there's some truth to that. Children don't seem to be particularly vulnerable to the virus. And especially now that we're seeing in this country, it seems like almost everybody that wants the virus has gotten it. Excuse me, the vaccine has gotten it. Maybe we should send some of these extra doses to places like India that don't have enough vaccines. What do you think? Answer either of those questions. 800-848-9222. Mike is in Staten Island. Hello, Mike.
Yeah, how you doing, Frank? I wanted to chime in on the China situation.
Tell me. Yes.
Okay, well, you keep talking about if China did this and if China did that, what should the penalty be? First of all, let's get back to, is China guilty or not? Here's what's important. I don't care if it came from a bat or a lab. If you want to find out what happened there, that's fine. The whole point is, I go back to January of 2020 when that virus hit in Wuhan, and they let people leave Wuhan, go all over the world, except not to go within China. That's where the problem lies, and that's where China was guilty, when they let that virus out of the system. And so I don't care how or where it came from. They are guilty. Let's point that out first. Then we have to figure out, what are we going to do about it? Well, we have a world organization that could sit down there and figure out what the hell the penalty should be. let all the world leaders chime in and figure out what it should be. I don't care if it's going to hurt us economically or any other country. You have to put China in its place. You just don't have a choice. You just can't let them get away with it. There is no ifs, ands, or buts. That's the way I feel.
First of all, Mike, you're right on the first point that even if this did come from a bat, and I think it's so important to prevent the next outbreak that we do find exactly how this outbreak came to be and how this virus developed. But they have some culpability regardless of the origins of the virus, because you're right on that front, allowing people to ship out from Wuhan to everywhere else in the world, but not necessarily anywhere else within mainland China. Thank you for the call, Mike. You make a good point. They have to pay the piper, right? They have to do something. I'm not willing to cripple the American economy as it's in the midst of a recovery in order to do that. So how do we punish China in a manner that holds them accountable for what they've done here, while at the same time not bringing down the American economy with it? It's almost, you got to picture if someone chooses to, if you're going to execute someone by drowning, if you're going to drown someone, how do you make sure they don't grab you into the water as they're drowning and pull you down to the ocean floor so that you die too? That's what I'm trying to figure out here. 800-848-9222. Rick is in New Jersey. Hello, Rick.
Good morning, Frank. Yes.
Morning.
Yes, I do believe that it came from the lab and they're totally responsible. But this question you're asking, how do we punish them? I think you're asking the question because, first of all, you're very thorough on everything. So it's hard for us to answer a question because you've answered them almost all. But I don't think there is, right? I mean, this is the way they set it up. This has been a long-term strategy for China to loan us money. It would have been like Chicago police borrowing money from Al Capone. You know, after a while, Al Capone would own them. Well, they own us in that respect. You know finances better than I. Cannot they, or can they call in that loan at any time?
There are terms from all these bonds that they've purchased from America, all these treasury bonds. But, I mean, I'm afraid, you know, the conclusion you drew is exactly what I'm most afraid of. And this is, I think, largely the result of America's inability or unwillingness to decouple from China. And thank you for the call, Rick, because both the American government and American corporations have become totally dependent on Chinese money, on Chinese markets, and on Chinese labor. And I am not, what Rick said is exactly what I'm afraid of. Is there a way to punish China in a meaningful way, in a way that they have to shoulder some of the economic burden that they've caused here without destroying at the same time the American economy? 800-848-9222. And I do want to get into some other issues as well, because this is such a downer, this issue. You talk about deadly viruses and the deadly economic geopolitical consequences that come with it. You know me, I'd prefer to talk about other lighthearted issues. But if you're bummed, not because of the nature of the coronavirus or the nature that China the nature of the Chinese government, but if you're bummed because you're suffering with a workplace injury, then I've got good news for you. I know some people that can help. That's the Staten Island law firm of Angiuli and Gentile. Angiuli and Gentile has been really expert in helping people with workplace injuries for a long time. If you've suffered a work-related injury, or if you have an occupational disease that has turned your life upside down, if you've asked yourself the question, how will I live while I'm out of work, or how will my work-related medical bills get paid, that's a degree of uncertainty that you no longer need to have. The Staten Island law firm of Angiuli and Gentile has been helping people out just like you for over 35 years. They'll help take the fear out of the workers' compensation process. These are good folks who I know personally. They'll meet with you, they'll listen to your concerns, and explain how the workers' compensation process works. The Staten Island lawyers at Angiuli and Gentile have handled thousands of hearings and will help you walk with confidence. Call Angiuli and Gentile right now. Well, you don't have to call right now. It's 3:40 in the morning. Call them today. Write this number down. Even if you don't have a workplace injury, you may know someone that does. 888-234-COMP. That's 888-234-COMP. They offer both in-person consultations or contactless video appointments. That's 888-234-COMP, 888-234-2667. Frank Morano, we're exploring two issues related to the coronavirus. Now that the United States has largely gotten every adult who wants to be vaccinated, should we take some of our vaccine doses and give them to other countries so that those countries can vaccinate their healthcare workers? That's question one. Question two is, how should we punish China? Whether this leaked from a lab or not, if China has some culpability here, what should the punishment be? Is there a way to properly punish China in a way that doesn't simultaneously cripple the American economy? 800-848-WABC. Al is in North Carolina. Hello, Al.
Hey, how you doing, Frank?
I'm hanging in there, Al. Al, that doesn't sound like a North Carolina accent, Al.
Well, no, I'm originally from Long Island, but I left there back in 86. I couldn't take it anymore.
Well, you left before it was fashionable.
Yeah. But listen, I'm 61. I'm a Marine Corps veteran. I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. And you had a guest on earlier who said we need to get together with our allies and stand up together. How many allies does the United States of America have right now? And how many would stand up for us if we're down? Who's going to stand up for the USA?
That's me. Right. I mean, look, I think when you're talking about international relations, Al, there are no permanent allies and there are only permanent interests, right? And so an international ally for any country is only as good as the moment that you need it for.
Okay. Only as good as the moment you need it for, but how much money have we been paying out to other countries for the last 30, 40, 50, 60 years to other countries?
No,
and they're supposed to be our allies, and they're not going to stand up for us.
No, you're right. You're right. I mean, I have been some of the reason that we give foreign aid to so many other countries, and you see this with and I don't want to make this a whole border discussion, but you see this with what the vice president's trying to do now in Guatemala, trying to bribe them into not having migrants come to our country. Part of the reason we give foreign aid is so countries will bend to our will. But I think you're right. I don't think there's anybody the United States can really count on unless they're in a similar situation, unless they're similarly situated where they can benefit from cooperating with us. I don't think there's anybody we can count on. 800-848-9222. We have a little bit of breaking news.
The Other Side of Midnight proudly presents Breaking News.
Christian brought to my attention just minutes ago that former New York Giants head coach Jim Fossil has passed away at only 71 years old, a pretty young man. Christian, what do we know at this point? What's the story?
I was just looking it up now. It seems to be he just happened to pass away. I was looking for Sid Sports Cuts. I'm trying to find out more information as we were coming back.
So we will keep you posted on this. I followed Jim Fossil's career for many years, just about my entire life as a football fan. And he had a long career with the Giants, six or seven seasons, including some pretty great success. And he had a pretty good legacy as the Giants head coach. They had a lot of strong playoff runs. And brought them to the NFC Championship in 2000. So sorry to hear about that.
Went to the Super Bowl that year, lost to the Ravens.
That's right.
As well, but according to his son, John Fossil, he died of a heart attack in Las Vegas.
Mm, yeah, that is a shame. He had been the president of the Las Vegas Locomotives of the United Football League as well. So that is a real shame. Gabby is here as well. How are you doing, Gabby? Gabby? Everything all right?
Yes, sorry. I'm tired.
You're tired?
Yes.
Well, maybe it was because you were in such a rush to get here instead of you should have been sleeping instead of speeding. You told me an interesting story before we went on air. What happened to you on the way here today?
Oh, Frank. You know, just the usual shenanigans. I was on my way here on the 495, and I guess I was going a little too fast. I got pulled over by a police officer, and when he pulled me over, I was just explaining to him that I was on my way into work. He was like, you know, where do you work? I told him that I work for 77 WBC, and he goes, oh, for what show? And I was like, I work the overnight shift. I work for Frank Morano, The Other Side of Midnight. And he goes, oh, okay. You know what? I actually like you guys, so you can just go.
Well, that's very nice. You shouldn't be speeding, but I'm glad officer took pity on you. Nobody else try this. No one else claim to be Gabby. In fact, the next time Gabby pulls this with a police officer, the police officer should call me to make sure that it's really Gabby.
I was saying to Christian, maybe I might get a phone call from him saying, hey, did you make it into work?
Yeah, so do we know this officer's name?
No, I wish I did, but if he hears this, thank you for letting me get into work on time.
Yes, thank you on our behalf. And slow down, Gabby. 800-848-9222. David calling from Israel. The country of Israel?
Yes.
All right, David. What's on your mind?
I think that the people voting against Trump will know how to handle China.
All right, David. It's a lousy phone connection. Carl is in Brooklyn. Hello, Carl.
How do you do? Good morning to you.
Good morning.
I was thinking regarding your question of China. I think it's important that we keep our commitment as far as debt to China, because it will kill our credit. But I think we can eliminate interest for the next day. And I think it will honor the debt, but it will eliminate and we'll be able to repay for all the stimulus just from the interest only.
Carl, so you broke up a little bit there because your phone's a little blippy. So what you're saying, I think I was able to gather, that we still repay China the money that we've borrowed from them, but we get them to agree to eliminate the interest on that debt. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, correct. I think it's important that no country feels threatened never to loan us money again, because we could always pull the plug on the loan. I think it's important that the loan stays in place, but I also think that it should be interest-free for the next 10 years so we could catch up.
Carl, I'm going to let you go just because your phone is terrible, but I like that idea, actually. I don't know. I'm not an economist, so I don't know what that would do to our credit rating, and I don't know how that would work. But to me, and again, I have a child's understanding of capital markets, so I'm not the best person to listen to, but I like that idea. He's saying, look, we still pay the money we owe, doesn't impact our credit rating, and as part of the penalty to help finance the damage that China has caused, we don't pay interest on these debt payments for 10 years. I kind of like the sound of that. Now, to be honest, a lot of the money that we've been borrowing for the last 13 years really, has been at super low interest because of this weird zero interest policy that we've been pursuing. That's a subject for another show, but I kind of like that Carl approach. 800-848-9222. Jeannie is in Queens. Hello, Jeannie.
Yes, hello. How are you today?
I'm well.
Okay, I have something to say about Fauci. There was a scientist, Judy Mikovits, who used to work with him in the lab, and she fingered him, and she was fired because she reported certain things that he did, part of which was this thing about Wuhan. And she worked on retroviruses, and there was some kind of scandal going on with that. And so she lost her job because of him, but she wrote a video called The Plandemic. and that's available, explaining all of this about COVID. Now, COVID is three viruses in one, so it's not a natural virus. It's a SARS, it's a flu, and it's AIDS mixed together. So what you said before about it not possibly being a natural virus is true.
And again, I want to make clear, Jeannie, because that I was just reading from this op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, which people could read for themselves. That was not my scientific understanding.
Right.
That's people who actually study this stuff for a living.
Okay. I also want to just add, the scandal within the scandal is that there is and was an alternative healing method to help people not have to die from COVID, which is intravenous vitamin C. Now, a lot of people don't believe this, and they think, oh, come on, don't be ridiculous. But this was proven by actually a Chinese doctor who saved thousands of patients there at the beginning of the virus. They did this in China. And it's 20 grams of C for the whole day, but spread out over several different periods of time, but it's intravenous.
Well, Jeannie, I think that's sort of a discussion for another day. I can't speak to that, and I haven't seen any credible medical experts that have suggested that as an approach, but it doesn't matter if I've seen it. That still doesn't necessarily answer our question of how do you adequately punish China, number one, and two, these vaccine doses that we have, should they be used on American children who are very unlikely to die from the virus, or should they be used on Indian healthcare workers? But that's neither here nor there. So I was, well, let me squeeze in a couple more quick calls. We'll get into more of my thinking on various subjects later. Hank is in New Jersey. Hello, Hank.
How you doing, Frank?
I'm well.
There's an old expression, how do you eat an elephant?
Very carefully.
The answer is one bite at a time. And that's how we have to handle China. I don't think we could go out hog wild to get them to turn around and be good guys. Just have to do, basically, I think what Trump was trying to do, bring back manufacturing to the United States, et cetera, things like that. As far as the interest goes, if you renege on paying interest, that is the equivalent of going bankrupt. So,
I think what Carl, it's a little unorthodox, admittedly, but I think what Carl was suggesting, Hank, was that this be done as part of an agreement with China as part of their sort of reparations for the damage they wrought with this kind of thing.
Except one thing, Frank, they're never going to admit they were wrong.
Well, that's fair too, Hank. You don't get the sense that they're the kind of regime that generally tries to own up to their mistakes. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Want to encourage you to like the Facebook page, facebook.com/MoranoFan. You know, we've all taken these photos on Facebook with all the WABC personalities. We've taken these photos on Facebook with all of us wearing boxing gloves. So I'm curious what you think of mine. I shared mine on Friday of my photo with the boxing gloves. I actually thought it was a pretty good photograph. I thought I looked pretty good. And then my wife, she said she didn't like the photo. So then all of a sudden, after I looked at it, after Rachel said that she didn't like it, then I liked it a lot less. So go ahead online, facebook.com/MoranoFan, and take a look at it and tell me what you think. And by the way, those of you that are interested in Curtis Sliwa's campaign, he is having a new campaign office grand opening tonight, Tuesday, from 6 to 8 p.m. at 450 7th Avenue. It's from 6 to 8 p.m., Office 707, 450 7th Avenue. If you like Curtis's Facebook page, there's the information on there, or you can go to his website, Curtis Sliwa for NYC.com. Curtis called me before. He wants to have a campaign conference call at 8 a.m. this morning. Curtis, I have to go to bed. All right. No, it's urgent. Okay. 8 a.m. So who knows? I'm hoping it's a brief campaign conference call. But people can't expect me to be at my best after being on the radio for 5.5 hours and then the hour drive home. They can't. 800-848-WABC. Howard is in Babylon. Hello, Howard.
Hiya, Frank. How you doing?
I'm hanging in there, Howard. Thanks.
Zach, I have a good idea of how to punish China without breaking them. I think we should discourage tourism to their country and spending our dollars in their country, and that would certainly cause them a problem.
So I like that idea. I like that approach. Look, if people want to go there, you can't really stop people from going there, I guess. But, I think that's all right. I mean, I think it's a good start, Howard. So how would you do that exactly?
I would publicize what's going on and let people know that if they go to China, they are promoting things like germ warfare experiments and a whole bunch of other things that are not good for our country.
Yeah, well, thank you, Howard. And look, if what Rand Paul was saying that I played for you at the beginning of the hour is true, that the American taxpayers were footing the bill for some of this Chinese research, then, look, everybody responsible for that decision is going to have some things to answer for as well. 800-848-WABC. Nick is in Fairhaven. Hello, Nick.
Hey, Frank. Why do we have to pay China back?
Well, we have to pay China back because if we don't, it would become very difficult for us to borrow money from anyone. And that would really devastate America's credit rating. Who would ever lend us money if we could just turn around and say, all right, you know, you were responsible for X, Y, or Z, and so now we're not going to pay you back?
It's all relative. Global synchronized QE is someone else thought of it. I think that's pretty funny. It's just if someone else is doing it, you could just keep doing it and you won't be comparatively worse and less enticing to investors. But
yeah, once
take other calls.
Well, all right, Nick, thank you. That's the first time I've had a caller saying take other calls. All right. Well, John is in Brooklyn. Hello, John.
Hello. I think there are a lot of very good things said so far about boycotting China. I think Chinese goods that we know we don't need are very good. I like the idea of bringing back tourism on our own. Don't go. I like the fact that we should dock China by not paying them back on our loans. But I want to say this, that the money that they've made from us, from the research and development that they got from academia and corporate knowledge, they're using to build their military up. They're building islands in the middle of the ocean, as we know, where there were no islands, and they're militarizing those islands, making them harbors. There's the danger not only from things like the Wuhan virus, but in general, I'm bringing up something that happened 40 years ago when I was working in the
John, unfortunately, we're out of time. I'm sorry. Call again tomorrow if you want to continue the point, but we're out of time. Hey, coming up next hour, we'll do something very exciting. What it is, I haven't figured it out yet, but trust me, it's going to be exciting. Until next hour, your influence counts, so use it.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
To go until the WABC early news, where I will be joined by the talented Juliette Huddy, and we'll bring you the news for 90 minutes. You notice what I didn't say there? I did not say the lovely and talented Juliette Huddy. I do occasionally, when I speak with someone on the air who's female, I will introduce them occasionally as the lovely and talented. And for instance, I was introducing Lauren Conlon last Tuesday. She's usually on Tuesdays, but she's going to be on with us tomorrow as part of Long Form Week. She's going to be with me for an hour. And Lauren is lovely. And I indicated as such in my introduction of her.
That is one of the many subjects that we are going to delve into with the lovely and talented and somebody that I don't think gets enough credit for just how nice a voice she has, the one and only. Yeah.
So, and then they play her sponsored introduction. And that's not the first time that I've referred to Lauren Conlon, the WABC entertainment correspondent, as lovely.
Here to help us break that down and a whole bunch of else, a whole bunch of other news that's happening in the world of entertainment is WABC's entertainment correspondent, the lovely and talented host of the Red Carpet Rendezvous podcast.
And then they play her sponsored introduction. Now, a couple of things here. One, now Lauren is quite pretty. You could follow her on Instagram at Lauren_interviews. But two, when I once mentioned on the air that Lauren was pretty, or whatever verb I used to describe her being pretty, or whatever adjective I used to describe her being pretty, Lauren privately thanked me and told me she got a whole bunch of new Instagram followers when I said that she was pretty. So she thanked me and encouraged me to do it again. Additionally, you know, Lauren and I are very good friends. If that was the first time I ever interviewed Lauren, I would not introduce her in such a manner. So, lo and behold, and I went back and listened to some of my interview with Jen Kearns on Friday, some of my interview with Marlena Shivo on Thursday, and I didn't hear any description of their looks. So I was talking with my wife on Saturday. I think it was Saturday. Yeah, last Saturday. And she said, you know, honey, this is not an issue that I have, but it's something I want you to be aware of. I think in the current climate, she didn't say you should really be hesitant. She says you really shouldn't be commenting on other women's looks on the air. You shouldn't say someone is pretty or lovely or anything like that on the air. He said, one, you know, I know that you and Lauren are friends, but let's say there's somebody else that you're not friends with. They could then say you have a pattern of objectifying women in the workplace. What do you want to give them that sort of leeway for? She said you have a lot of, you shouldn't say a lot, but you have some enemies in the world of politics. You have some enemies in the world of radio. And do you think it's really wise for you to be commenting on women's looks? And her advice was to not do that at all. And again, she reiterated that it wasn't that she was jealous. She just said, for my own sake, that I shouldn't be doing it. Now, I so hate to bend to the whims of 2021 America. I so hate to kind of go along with that. But my thinking is she might be right. Even though Lauren likes being referred to as lovely, and we can ask her tomorrow, but even though Lauren likes being referred to as lovely, maybe I should just not refer to anybody based on their looks. Now, I hate that because I'm kind of an old-fashioned guy where it was not a big deal to say that someone was pretty. And in fact, Juliette Huddy and I have talked about this on air, and she said that, you know, if I remember correctly, if I'm representing her position correctly, that she doesn't have an issue with it. I'm curious what you think. Should I do as my wife suggests, which I probably will end up doing, and completely cease that description of guests, irrespective of the circumstances, of calling them the lovely and talented or the, you know, whatever, beautiful and gracious, whatever. 800-848-9222. Tell me what you think. 1-800-848-WABC. Because I get what she means. You know, let's say there's a false accusation of sexual harassment of me one day. And trust me, I'm not in the habit of sexually harassing people. Let's say there's a false accusation of sexual harassment one day. Do I really want them to be able to play all these tapes of me commenting on women's looks? The answer is probably not. Curious what you think. 800-848-WABC. Gabby, as our resident female on the staff here, what is your take? Is it inappropriate for me to introduce Lauren, for instance, as the lovely and talented host of the Red Carpet Rendezvous podcast?
I mean, to Rachel's point, I understand what she's saying. Like, God forbid there is a false accusation or whatever. I mean, I personally, I don't think it's a big deal because, you know, people say that kind of stuff to me all the time, and I don't get some type of way because I know, like, some people just, you know, recognize how you look. Whatever, it's fine, for me anyways. But I think, like Rachel was saying, like, if there's ever an accusation or something like that, it's probably better safe than sorry to not do those things. But yeah, with Lauren, she's, you know, it's Lauren, so...
Right. There is like a Lauren exception to a lot of these rules. You get exactly what I mean.
Yeah.
All right. 800-848-9222. Tell me where you fall. Are you on the unabashed, everybody should be, you know, fair game to say lovely? Even from time to time, I have referred to people as lovely when they actually aren't. Or are you of the Rachel view that I shouldn't be calling anybody, making any comments about anyone's looks? Or are you of the Gabby view, which is that there's a Lauren exception to the Rachel rule? 800-848-9222. Christian, you have a view on this?
I mean, I didn't even realize Lauren is female. Everyone's just the same to me.
Exactly.
I don't notice anything.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Lauren, Gabby, I don't notice anything.
Fair enough. All right. Now, 800-848-WABC. So Christian occasionally has some wisdom.
Well, thank you. I think
you're welcome. Yes. Yesterday, Christian and I were talking about the situation at Friday's Talkers Conference. Now, I must say, I'm incredibly excited about the Talkers Magazine Conference coming up on Friday. My plan is to leave the post-show meeting on Friday, drive out to Long Island, go to a couple of these panels at Hofstra, and then I was thinking that I actually might get a hotel room so that I could sleep during some of the panels that, you know, maybe I was less interested in seeing, although they all seem pretty interesting, but I'd need to sleep eventually, and then also do a post-reception reception at the hotel where everyone is staying. Now, I'm reluctant to spend the night out there because my wife's not coming with me. I don't want to spend – we only get two nights where we get to go to sleep together. So I'd rather not spend one of those two nights in a hotel room out on Long Island. But I was thinking maybe I grab a nap there after the post-reception reception and then I drive back or something the case may be. So yesterday I called the Long Island Marriott and my goal was twofold. To book a hotel room that I had the ability to cancel, number one. And number two, as Christian suggested yesterday on the air, was to see if the bar was open. And so I called them yesterday, and I will tell you exactly how that worked out in mere moments. But I hear the dulcet tones of Juliette Huddy. Which leads me to think that she may have something to add on this subject. Hello there, Juliette.
Hi. Why don't you just stay at our house?
Well, how close are you to Hofstra?
Well, where's Hofstra?
Well, I think it's
Juliette, you're
there.
About 45 minutes away from Hofstra.
Oh, yeah. Forget about that. No way.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Hofstra is Nassau County.
I'm not
you're
really looking
Suffolk
for
County.
A place to stay. I'm looking for a place to nap during panels and after the post-reception reception before I hit the road.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't make any sense for you to come all the way out to Huntington. So,
right. It would not. Juliette, how much of the discussion that we just had did you get to hear?
Zero.
Zero. All right. Yeah. Well, why did Christian, you made it sound like Juliette wanted to comment.
Because
I did.
She did.
Oh, on
I
the
asked
Hofstra
him, like,
issue.
Yeah.
Oh, OK. Gotcha. All right. Well, stay.
Okay, in my defense.
Juliette, don't move. Don't move.
She did not give me any indication of where she was going.
Gotcha.
With her comment.
OK. Don't move. So what we were talking about before is let me hear that same audio cut, Christian, that I just played for the audience so that Julia can can hear what we're talking about.
Here to help us break that down and a whole bunch of else, a whole bunch of other news that's happening in the world of entertainment is WABC's entertainment correspondent, the lovely and talented host of the Red Carpet Rendezvous podcast.
So, Juliet, that's a part of my introduction to Lauren Conlon last Tuesday, mm-hmm. where I referred to her as lovely. Mm-hmm. Is it inappropriate in 2021 for a man on the radio to refer positively to a woman's looks on the air?
Well, it doesn't mean that you're saying anything about her looks. I mean, lovely can be a kind person. I've called people men lovely. I've called couches lovely. So, no. No, that's absurd.
All right.
And by the way, even if you were saying that she looks pretty today, I don't buy into this nonsense. I really don't. You're not in charge of her job. You're not holding something over her.
Well, but not her, let's say. But let's say, like, could somebody else take me referring to you? Because I'm sure I've talked about you, you know, being pretty or beautiful or something like that on the air. Could somebody take these comments that I've made about you, Lauren, and others and say, oh, Frank, listen to these tapes. He's got a pattern of objectifying women or defining them based on their looks.
Yeah, these days, yeah, seems like the world has turned over on its axis.
So
because you can, yes, that could be probably used, which is absurd.
So I shouldn't do that in the future, I guess.
I mean, I think that's taking who you are out of you. I mean, I tell people that all the time. I say things like sweetie, honey, all the time to guys, to girls, to younger people, while I'm on the air, it's who I've become. I mean, it's who I am. It's who I've been for 51 years.
Well, it is a different standard for a man, though. It is in terms of this stuff. Now, I don't call anyone sweetie on the air. That's for sure. But I get what you mean. Let's see what the folks have to say. 800-848-9222. Rich in Manhattan, should I stop saying people are lovely?
Regrettably, yeah, you should. And let me ask you this. Do you ever comment about the looks of a man?
Yes, I have called men handsome, especially Mr. GQ, who I work with on the 5 a.m. NewsHour, Sid Rosenberg. Yeah, I have.
Oh, okay. Well, fair enough then. At least you could, in the current climate, it's risky. I wouldn't do it either.
All right.
To your wife. But on the other hand, you have evidence to show that, you know, you do it equally.
Yeah.
Both with women and with men. And so then, at least you would have a defense if somebody were to accuse you of.
Yeah, you know what I have to – thanks, Rich. I have to be like Richard Lewis in that Curb Your Enthusiasm episode, just start calling everyone honey. I have to now go over the top in describing all these men's looks. Let me ask the very handsome Christian Arnold about his view on that.
Well, Frank, you're probably the only person to ever refer to me as that. So
yeah, that's what I was just saying. I would love to be called handsome on the air.
It's made my day.
It's nice. Exactly. Right? It is nice.
It's nice, actually.
Joe in New Jersey. Hello.
Yes, I think you should very muchly watch that. Some of your peers have been booted off, such as Tom Ashbrook and Leonard Lopate. And by the way, they study viruses in China because that's how they study what flu to come up with, for the vaccines.
Okay, well, let's move on from the flu issue. 800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222 if you have a thought on this. We'll tell you about my hotel endeavors in just a minute. Gabby, you had something else that you wanted to add before we moved on, though.
I was just having a conversation with Bob from Queens, and he, to Juliet's point of the lovely comment, calling someone lovely is not always saying something about how they look. It could be their personality. Somebody could be lovely. I mean, I get callers all the time that tell me that I sound like a lovely person or I'm so sweet or stuff like that. And, I think it's more of a personality thing as well as maybe looks.
Yeah, no, I mean, I tend to agree. I mean, to me, it's just kind of something you say to be nice. I'm not actually sitting there with a scoreboard evaluating these women's looks on a scale of 1 to 10. You know, it's
yes, but
a
I just
different.
Think in general, like when people say those things as well, I think, you know, in today's day and age, everybody gets a little sensitive.
Yeah.
About
well, that's the thing. That's why I almost don't want to play into this. Like, I don't want to succumb to the ultra sensitive mafia that makes people afraid to say that they're cold when they're cold outside, when it's cold. So I don't want to play into this, but I think I may have to. I think that might be my only option here. I don't want to give into this, but I think I might have to. 800-848-9222. I'll tell you what I'm not giving into: fatigue and constipation. You know why? Because of Life Change Tea. Life Change Tea is an herbal proprietary formula that gives you more energy without caffeine. It's a cold tea. I drink 2 glasses of this stuff every day. Tastes great. There's no fillers. It's completely organic. No GMOs. It's a mild cleanse, a daily detox that cleanses you from the inside out. It gets all the junk from inside your colon and inside your gut, and it gets it out of your colon and out of your gut. That's why they call it the tea that makes you go. I drink this stuff. It's great. If you want to try it, go to the website getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. And use the promo code Frank. Getthetea.com, promo code Frank.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. So as I was saying, I tried to call as Christian suggested, and it was very good advice. He suggested call the Long Island Marriott. Just make sure the bar is still going to be open so that when you and Juliet host your post-reception there, at least it's open. Now, this is very sound advice. So I wanted to call the Long Island Marriott, which I did yesterday, with the intention of doing two things. One, booking a room that I would have the option of canceling up to 24 hours in advance in case I chose not to get this room. Two, make sure the bar was still open. Now, those should not be complicated things. Am I right? Okay. So I call the Long Island Marriott. I get a machine and it sounds like this.
Good day. Thank you for calling the Long Island Marriott. To make a reservation, press 1. For sales, press 2.
So, I press 2. I press 2, and it connects me to a gentleman named Michael. Nice guy. And I first ask about the easy thing. Now, what's the easy thing? What would you assume, Christian, the easy thing in my goals in this conversation? What's the easier thing to know?
How to get a room and the hotel bar.
Right. Well, of those two.
A hotel bar.
Right.
Should be very simple.
Right. Yes or no? Right. So I asked Michael. I said, Michael, just want to see if this bar is open. And he says, oh, I actually can't help you with that. I'm not actually on the premises. You'd have to call the hotel directly from that. I'm not there. Oh, okay. All right. So then I go through this long process of trying to book a hotel room. I book this room. And then he says, oh, okay, well, we actually can't let you book this room and cancel up to 24 hours. You'd have to prepay and not be able to cancel. We'd have to book you a different room. Well, how much is that room? Oh, that's $15 more. All right, I guess I'll book that one. So then they have to begin the whole process over again. I have to give them all my information, including my credit card, my email. This is going on and on and on and on. And then I said, Michael, can you transfer me back to the hotel, the Long Island Marriott. He said, no, unfortunately, I don't have the ability to do that. You're going to have to call them again and press zero. I said, Michael, I tried that, and all I got was a machine. And this was my experience trying to get a person to just find out if the bar was going to be open Friday after the reception so that Juliet and I could throw this post-reception reception. This was my experience.
Good day. Thank you for calling the Long Island Marriott. To make a reservation, press 1. For sales, press 2. For the front desk, press 3.
So I pressed 3.
For billing questions, press 4. For HR,
please hold.
I'm holding, waiting for a person. And then what I ultimately end up hearing is not a person, but more options.
Good day. Thank you for calling the Long Island Marriott. To make a reservation, press 1. For sales, press 2. For the front desk, press 3.
So I press 3.
For billing questions,
please hold.
Waiting. So,
good day. Thank you for calling the Long Island Marriott.
There's no person.
To make a reservation, press 1. For sales, press 2.
And then every time you push the option, again, I tried 0, which Michael, who booked my room, told me to press. I tried number 3, which the person, you know, the other person telling me to try. And then I tried the other options. And I just started leaving messages at all the other options in the hopes that somebody would call me back. This was an hour of my day today. Yesterday. An hour that I didn't have to spend. I was going through my to-do list, and I thought this was going to be a quick item to cross off my to-do list. And sure enough, it took an hour. An hour. So I don't want to send out the invitation to the Fruliette post-reception reception, unless I know there's somewhere we can actually be. So I had a very frustrating experience with that. I will tell you, if they don't get back to me tomorrow, or at least pick up the phone, have a person pick up the phone, or give me an email that I can email somebody. I'm not averse to email. I prefer email. If they don't get back to me tomorrow, I am canceling my room, and I'm not staying there, and there will be no post-reception reception. And it's a shame that all these talk show hosts from around the country would have to suffer by not getting to enjoy our company and the wondrous post-reception reception, but I'll be damned if I'm going to do this stuff. Christian is calling them. Do you have a person?
Yes, he has someone on the phone with him right now.
Good. Well, let him report. How does he get a person? I tried repeatedly, and he gets a person at 4:30 in the morning? What's going on over there? All right, we're going to have Christian report back to us as soon as. What's going on here, Christian?
Yeah, I just got a person within 5 minutes.
Well, how did you get a person?
I mean, you know, Long Islanders have.
Did you have
Long
a special number?
No, I looked up the number. It's probably the same one you called.
Why wouldn't we have called them on the air then?
Well, because I didn't really think I'd get a person on the phone like that.
Way to make me look bad. So what did this person say?
Bar is usually open until 11 o'clock. They start serving food and dinner and drinks at 5.
What is the name of the bar?
Oh, I have no idea.
Oh, see, these are the questions, Christian.
It's the hotel bar at the Long Island Marriott.
Well, can you call them back and find out the name this way? This way, like, I don't want to direct people to, if there's also a restaurant and a bar, I don't want to direct people to an area there, you know, they may not be familiar.
I can tell you there is no, it's the only restaurant slash bar in that
because
building.
I was reading some of the reviews and they said the sports bar there, Champions, is not there anymore.
Doesn't exist. What I was explaining to you yesterday on the air, Champions is where the Champions was the restaurant bar there, which is now the new, more modern, more elegant restaurant bar that they have in the hotel since they classed up the joint.
Will you do me a favor and find out the name of this bar,
okay,
please?
I'll find out the name
so that we
of the
can
bar.
Send out this Frouliette, you know, invitation to the post reception reception. Paul is in Manhattan. Hello, Paul.
Yeah, what your producer just told you is exactly correct. They revamped the whole hotel and they changed everything around. What I was going to tell you, as far as sleeping and renting a room, not the reception stuff. Within minutes of that Marriott, there are many other hotel or motel options. Some of them you could even rent by the hour and pay cash.
Oh, you're kidding. Do you have any specific
literally right around the corner.
What, do you have
Coliseum
any?
Inn, the Pinewood Inns, and then there's a whole bunch of corporate hotels within 3 minutes.
The Pinewood
Inn? Do not stay at the Coliseum Inn. Please don't do that.
I don't care. Well, I'm not looking for amenities here, Christian. I'm looking for a place to take a nap for 45 minutes during one of the boring panels.
Pinewood is nice. It's right down the street.
Pinewood. It's the Pinewoods Inn?
Yeah.
All right. I think that might be the move, Paul. Cause why should I spend $250?
Oh, you know what? In fairness, though, you're the one who's always trying to get me to stay in these Roach Coach motels when we go down to Atlantic City. So you know what? Stay at the Coliseum Inn.
So the Coliseum Inn, that's...
I didn't even think that place is still open, to
yeah,
be honest.
I was looking. I didn't see it. But
no, it's... So the Coliseum Inn is on Hempstead Turnpike. It's what... I think it was next to... And what used to be a Hooters, I think it's a Sonic now, and a Burger King or something like that.
So it looks like, let's see, if I check in Friday, all right, I mean, it looks, it's $100. That's $150 less than what I'd be paying. See, they had a group rate for the conference, but they gave away all of the rooms at the group rate. So I had to ultimately pay it at the AAA rate of $260, which I don't want to do. So, look, I'm looking at this Coliseum Inn. How close is this Coliseum Inn to Hofstra?
It's right down the street.
And what about to the other hotel where we're going to have the post-reception reception?
Right down the street. So Hofstra is a little, like, not even a mile past the Nassau Coliseum and the hotel, the Long Island Marriott. The Long Island Marriott is attached, basically, to the Nassau Coliseum. And it's where a lot of the teams, the NHL teams, stay when they play the New York Islanders.
All right. Well, I think that's the move. I think I'm going to cancel my room at the the Long Island Marriott. Although it is convenient to have the post reception and then just to be able to walk over there and nap for another 45 minutes rather than to go to a third venue, you know. But it's not $150 worth of convenience. Let's see. Free cancellation before 11:59 on June 8th. I think I might get this. I might reserve this. It's $100. I'm going to reserve it. All right. I'm going to reserve this. 800-848-WABC. We'll continue with your calls next. Any subject is fair game. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. You can email me as well at frank.moreno@wabcradio.com. That's frank.moreno@wabcradio.com. Just got this email here from a gentleman named James who writes both, and my name is frank.moreno@wabcradio.com. Both you and Rachel are correct. Rachel is necessarily being cautious. You should be readily allowed to say lovely or any equivalent. I definitely tell a person how good they look, but I'm not on the radio. Sadly, times have sure changed. Jamie. So that's the shame of it. I want to make sure I don't want to play into the kind of the woke culture of 2021, but I also don't want to get in trouble. You see where I'm at? 800-848-9222. Mike is in West Palm Beach. Hello, Mike.
Buongiorno, Frank.
Buongiorno.
I'll tell you, it's always a pleasure talking with Gabby, and shout out to Christian. You know, I'm tuned in for the last half hour. I got to ask you a question, Frank.
Okay. And I'm surprised Julia didn't know what Hofstra was. I mean, anyway, are you more concerned with getting a hotel room at a nice hotel and it has to have a bar? Because there are plenty of good hotels on Old Country Road, like, I don't know, a mile north of Hofstra.
Well, so, so Mike, the post-reception I would like at the Long Island Marriott, because that's where right. everybody from the convention is staying. So it's very right. easy for me to say, oh, as soon as the reception ends at Hofstra, just come to Juliet and my post-reception at the Long right. Island Marriott. And there are some people like Gabby and Christian, they're not going to the conference, but they're going to come to the post-reception since they're out there on Long Island. It's okay. easy for me to direct people out there. But, so that's kind of what that's why we're the venue for the post-reception is there.
Okay. Is that going to be a one-day conference at Hofstra or 2 days?
It's just Friday. Just Friday.
Oh, just Friday. Okay. Well, now here's a choice. You know, if the bar had limited hours, you know, I'm not saying this facetiously, but you can bring a bottle. Just go to a liquor store, bring a bottle, and pour yourself a couple of drinks in your nice hotel room. You know, the case. But I've stayed at the Marriott, beautiful, right behind the Coliseum. You know, a stone's throw away from Hofstra, as you know. That's your choice. You know.
Well, that's kind of what I'm trying to figure out. All right. So thank you, Mike. Gabby just sent me some information on the Pines Motor Lodge here. Gabby, what do we have in terms of rates for this hotel, the Pines Motor Lodge? Do we know anything about that?
1 second, looking into it.
Yeah, all right.
Hey, Frank.
Hello, Juliet.
Here's my question, though. Why are we telling everybody where we're going to be on a certain specific? I mean, maybe it's not so bad for you, but like for people like that guy who just called, who made a little, you know, snide comment about me not knowing where Hofstra was. I didn't know it was in Hempstead. I knew.
I don't think he's pretty nice to you. I don't think he was trying to be mean.
I don't know, but I mean, you know, there certainly are a lot of people who have not made such nice comments and who have actually made threats. So perhaps maybe we don't blast this all over the place.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. Ultimately,
yeah.
In hindsight,
yeah. Because I've had a few say, you know what? When I see you, I'm gonna, you know, and I just
all right. Well,
not
Juliet's
to get into
not coming.
On
I'll
Friday
tell you that
night.
Juliet's not coming. She's now boycotting the post reception.
No,
reception.
I'll go. I'll just make sure I bring all of my weaponry.
Yes, yes, yeah, and maybe your husband.
You know, that's a good idea. Yeah. He's been angling to take somebody down, so yeah.
Exactly. All right, Gabby, what do we have in terms of rates at the Pines Motor Lodge?
All right, so we have a 3.4 stars on Google reviews, okay. But some customers say fantastic customer service, wonderful new rooms, and unbeatable price. Good prices, restaurants close by, friendly service. The place was fantastic, clean, good smell, very relaxing environment to be at.
Place sounds great.
But I would urge you to look at the photos.
No, I'm looking at the photos. It doesn't look like doesn't look exactly like an Acropolis, right? It doesn't look like Shangri-La. I'll admit that. But what is the price, Gabby? Do we have that information?
One second.
We're still looking.
All right. So we'll see. That must mean it's pretty good. If they don't even list the price,
that's never a good sign.
No, I bet you it is. I bet you it is. I think I'm going to cancel my Marriott reservation and move to the, as that caller suggested, who I appreciate, I'm going to move to the Pines Motor Lodge. See, how close is this? This is in Westbury, Christian. How close is that?
Westbury's probably like 10, 15 minutes away.
See, I don't want to do the 10, 15 minutes. You know, I kind of want to be right there. That's where I am. All right. Let me say hello to Francis in the Boogie Down Bronx. Hello, Francis.
Yes, Rick. I'm calling about the concern about when you say something about women, you seem like a harmless person, and you treat everybody genuine, and it's nothing wrong, because I can say that if you call someone sweetie and she gives you a facial expression, you should realize she didn't like it. And the thing is that it's not that you're saying it. If the person that did not like it and you say it away from the studio privately, she can say something that he said, she said, and have you on charges. It's like it's like you're saying something to a woman that looks like Igor. Oh, you're very beautiful today. She'll say she'll sue you because you're making fun of her.
I see. Well, so, Francis, I guess I'm not clear where that leaves me with my future on-air behavior. What sort of language should I avoid, or what
It's not. You seem like a down-to-earth person. Everyone gets along with you. It's nothing wrong. It's the way you say it, and it's non-threatening. So continue the good work. And every woman loves a compliment.
Not every woman, but I think a lot of them.
No.
You have to know your audience, Francis, you know right?
Right. Yeah. That you, go ahead. Continue, sir.
Yeah, thank you. 800-848-WABC. Trisha is in North Carolina. Hello, Trisha.
Hi, Frank. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Thanks.
I wanted to call. I really enjoy your show. And if I was going to describe your show to a friend of mine or tell them to listen to, I would say there's this great guy. He's lovely. He's sincere. He's thoughtful. He's gracious. And just a beautiful man all the way around. And I've never seen you. So I think it speaks more
to... Well, obviously, you wouldn't be saying I'm lovely and beautiful if you had seen me, Trisha.
Okay, well, I'm just saying that I think I've never heard you call anybody sweetie, honey, any
No, I think that's probably, that's not something I'm comfortable doing, other than, you know, to my wife.
I think that you introduce people, I think you're really sincere and a really thoughtful host, and when you introduce people and you say something along, I don't even think I've ever heard you say beautiful. If you, in fact, I think you've actually said lovely about men, too, like this is a lovely person or something like that. I think that you're doing it all right.
Well, thank you, Trisha. I appreciate that. And I'm going to save a transcript of this call for if I ever get called up before a court on sexual harassment charges. Appreciate that very much. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Joe is in Ronkonkoma. Hello, Joe.
Hey, Frank. How you doing tonight?
I'm hanging in there. Thanks, Joe.
I have a little suggestion with your dilemma with the hotel. Are you driving there?
Yes, I'm driving. See, that's why I would like a hotel room to be able to nap in, because I don't want to. I'm going to be on no sleep. So I'm going to be up from probably 3 p.m. on Thursday. I get to Hofstra probably around 8:30, 9 a.m. on Friday. I'll have been up with no sleep. So if I find myself starting to drift off during one of the panel discussions, I'd like to be able to hop away to a hotel room, sleep for 45 minutes, go back, enjoy the rest of the conference, go to the reception, go to the post-reception, then maybe sleep for another hour or two before driving back to Staten Island.
What about just going out to your car, putting the air conditioner, reclining your seat back, and saving yourself a lot of money?
Well, I've wondered, that's what I was thinking too. And that's what I was thinking, whereas if I end up canceling this hotel room, maybe I would do that. So actually, that's very much a strong possibility, Joe.
Well, enjoy yourself and good luck with everything.
Thank you, Joe. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Evelyn is in Bayonne. Hello, Evelyn. Oh, Evelyn. Hello. Evelyn?
Frank?
Yes, Evelyn.
Frank, I have a suggestion for you. I would be so frustrated if I were you over the Marriott experience on the telephone. I would suggest that you write a simple letter to the president of Marriott, and it will get passed to the appropriate person, because that's a customer-based organization. They don't want to hear complaints. I will practically guarantee you that you will get a free night for your inconvenience.
Well, see, I don't like to do that, Evelyn. Honestly, I know a lot of radio people that kind of use the platform of being on the radio in order to get free stuff. I try not to do that because, you know, it's a big power to be on the radio. So I try not to abuse it. But
only just write your name. I wouldn't say what it was for or that you have a radio platform or anything, just as a potential customer that they lost or will lose.
Yeah, maybe you're right, Evelyn. Thank you. That's not bad, but I kind of just think maybe I should cancel. Maybe I should go with that Joe from Ronkonkoma method. Now, we got the word here from Juliet's husband that the Pine Motor Lodge is a sex hotel. That is the word from Juliet's husband.
That makes sense. It's what I think of when I hear Pinewood Lodge or Comac Motor Inn, which is a staple on Long Island, which they used to run these.
Now, there was also a stabbing there.
Well, this is too
easy. I'm not afraid of it.
Again, this is the same man who tries to get me to stay in, like, the so-and-so motel in Atlantic City.
Yeah, I'm not afraid of a stabbing. Now, how does Juliet's husband know that it's a sex hotel?
Well, I mean, in fairness, you can kind of tell the sketchy motels.
It's a pay-by-hour.
Oh, it is a pay-by-hour?
Yeah, that's what he said.
So
right?
That's good. He said he thought it was a pay-by-hour, the caller.
It looks like a pay-by-hour.
Well, I need a pay-by-hour because I don't want to pay for a whole night. Let me spend
Frank, there's
pay
no
for
one
hour.
Going to actually sleep in a pay-by-hour hotel on Long Island.
There's
100%.
No,
yeah.
I don't know where you think you're going, where this is a pay-by-hour hotel and it's a good idea. It's not. It's really not.
Fair enough. 800-848-WABC.
Frank, if it's really that bad, you can come to my apartment's 30 minutes away, but you can come stay for a couple hours, sleep, and then I'll take you back to Hofstra. So you don't have to do that.
Well, that's – I mean, but am I going to get a restful sleep there? I picture all sorts of noise being on at your apartment, people and hockey games and stuff. I want to, you know, be able to just chill out. And it's a half hour away. It's too far. And I feel like I'm going to have to meet people and make small talk. I don't want to do that. You live with all sorts of people.
I live
some
with
of them,
one person who you've met.
I know, but he's got initials instead of a name. Who wants to deal with that? 800-848-9222. All right, we're going to do 15 seconds of fame next. So I feel better about sending out this invitation now that Christian's confirmed that the bar is going to be open. I feel a little bit better about the sleeping possibility now that I know about this stabbing slash sex hotel that's not far from where I'm going to be staying. So now the question is, do I cancel the hotel that I booked at Marriott? I think the answer is yes. And then I either go with the Joe from Ronkonkoma method of sleeping in my car, or I go to this hourly hotel at the Pine Motor Lodge. I think that might be a better situation because I don't think I'm going to need to sleep for more than a couple of hours. Now, but the problem is I may need to sleep at 1 p.m. and then again at 8 p.m. What do you do there? Then it doesn't really behoove me to get an hourly hotel right at that time. I don't know. I'll figure it out. But I think that's the move, to cancel this Marriott room. I think that's it. All right. 800-848-9222. Although I guess I could deduct it, right? Could I deduct this? I don't know. All right. 1-800-848-WABC. Say whatever you want for 15 seconds and only 15 seconds straight ahead. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Well, it's time for you to be heard, if only for 15 seconds. 1-800-848-9222 is our telephone number. 1-800-848-922, because it's time for
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
E. Frank in Astoria, you've got 15 seconds.
Yes, I heard that Maya Wiley, the mayoral candidate, is being supported by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Guess what? I and Donovan and many other native New Yorkers are being supported by the soul of John Lindsay. God bless him.
Thank you. Yes, I reported that yesterday, the Maya Wiley endorsement. Joe in Manhattan, you've got 15 seconds.
Listen, actually, if it was not Lauren regarding this comment I'm going to make just now, it was someone who called from Fox TV a couple of months ago, stating that O'Reilly comes across as very narcissistic, arrogant, and appears to be...
Thank you, Joe. I don't know where these people get these phones. 800-848-WABC. Fred is in Yonkers. Hello, Fred.
Frank Moreno. Frantic City. Frantic City. Girls will never know. Girls will never know. Frank Moreno. Frantic City.
All right. Thank you, Fred. You had five more seconds there. 800-848-9222. Tyrone is in the Bronx.
Tyrone?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. Frank, listen. Go with your wife and stop commenting on their looks. Also, China, like any other country, rises and falls all throughout history. Greeks, Romans, French, Spanish, English, America, now China.
Thank you, Tyrone. 800-848-9222. Neil is on Staten Island. Hello, Neil.
Go to that sex motel. You might bring home bed bugs. And since when does Frank Morano pay for a hotel room? Don't you just walk into someone's house, go into the master bedroom, and go to sleep?
Tom is in Astoria. Hello, Tom. Anthony is in Edison. Hello, Anthony.
Yes, good morning. We found out yesterday that Donald Trump and Bill O'Reilly is going to be taking the big tour around America, and it's great that they're going to get the truth out, and it's time for the Republicans to grow a backbone and start going after these Democrats and stop sitting around BSing and writing stupid books that Democrats don't like, want to read them, and they don't care about it. We got to be more proactive and take the truth to the street.
All right. On that note, Anthony, we gave you a full 30 seconds there, so we will end it there. If you want to stay in touch with me, you can do so via email at frank.morano@wabcradio.com. That's frank.morano at wabcradio.com. Or you could find me on Twitter at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. Oh, you know what I had on my list of things to do today? I didn't get to do it. I am officially declaring myself heterosexual. So now that everybody knows, I am out of the closet. I am heterosexual, straight as can be, straight as an arrow. Now, the reason I'm doing that is because I don't think that you care whether I'm heterosexual or not. Why do people feel the need to send out press releases and make social media posts declaring themselves gay or bisexual or queer, as Governor Cuomo's daughter, Michaela, did? So Governor Cuomo's daughter, Michaela, has just came out as queer. Now, who cares what her sexuality is? Why does she feel the need to announce that to the world? I just don't understand. It's to me, it's as ridiculous as me announcing my sexuality to the world. You don't have to announce it. It's between you and whomever you want to have sex with or try to have sex with. It doesn't need to be. The cynic in me thinks that part of this is to help Governor Cuomo with some issues that he's facing related to his handling of various aspects of sexuality. I don't know. All right. I want to encourage you to like the Facebook page. Go to Facebook.com/MoranoFan in our battle to try to make me a social media star. We only get to do that if you do your part. So go to the Facebook page, Facebook.com/MoranoFan, and click like. And you also want to join the Facebook group by searching Morano Radio Fans and Haters. That's M-O-R-A-N-O Radio Fans and Haters. Terry Malone commenting in the Facebook group: what I learned after listening to Frank's relatively, considering the station he's on, strong interview with right-wing lunatic Bernard Kerik, Hunter Biden's hard drive is the new Benghazi. All right. Well, I appreciate sort of a backhanded compliment. I'll take compliments any way I could get them. All right. We're going to bring you the WABC early news for the next 90 minutes. And Joe Nolan's got traffic. Juliet Huddy has all the latest headlines. I'll do my part with business and some headlines of my own. Sid Rosenberg is in the building. He's got sports, quite a bit happening in the world of sports, including we'll bring you some more information on the passing of former New York Football Giants head coach Jim Fossil, who has passed away at the age of 71. I'm going to be back at 1 a.m. tomorrow. I'll be joined by Brian Rosenwald, the scholar who has written the book on talk radio, and the aforementioned Lauren Conlon will join me for an hour as well. So we got a lot to get to tomorrow and for the rest of long form interview week. All right. Stay tuned for the WABC early news with Juliet Huddy and me. Don't go anywhere, folks, because there's a lot of news that we need to inform you about. Find me on Instagram as well, at Morano Vision. That's M-O-R-A-N-O Vision. To be continued.